Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Most good bosses want diverse, bias-free teams. They want men and women of all different ages representing a variety of cultures and races. In practice, of course, that kind of melting pot is hard to create. In some areas, industries, and functions, it can seem nearly impossible. And then there's the other problem. Even if you achieve the kind of diversity you want, you might struggle to manage the group in a way that makes everyone feel included and valued. The kinds of bias prevention programs that many companies use can be highly ineffective. Bias runs deep, and it's hard to eradicate. But according to our guest today, you can interrupt it pretty easily. The leaders she studied do this in three areas: hiring, day-to-day management, and talent development. While workplaces might not ever be bias-free, they can become better if bosses learn to head off anti-diversity thinking at the pass. She's here now to walk us through the steps. Joan Williams is a professor and the founding director of the Center for Work-Life Law at the University of California's Hastings College of the Law, and the author of the HBR article, How the Best Bosses Interrupt Bias. Joan, welcome to the show.
Delighted to be here, Allison.
So let's start with a brief refresher. What are some of the common types of bias that we see in the workplace? What are we talking about here?
There are really four basic patterns of bias. The first I call prove it again. It's that some groups have to prove themselves more than others. So, for example, some groups are judged on their potential, others on whether they've already nailed it. The second I call the tightrope, and that's that a narrower range of behavior is accepted from some groups than others. And that means that for those groups for whom a narrower range of behavior is accepted, their office politics is just a bit more complicated. The third is called the maternal wall, and that's gender bias triggered by motherhood. Also affects fathers, by the way, if they show that they're taking an active role in family care. And then the final one is another race-gender pattern. It's when bias against a disadvantaged group sets up conflict within that group. And again, like prove it again and tightrope, this last pattern, tug of war, is triggered both by race and by gender.
And again, this is a refresher, but why is bias such a big problem for corporate performance and productivity? You know, aside from wanting to be better humans, why should managers be acutely focused on this?
Well, it's now been well documented that well-managed diverse groups simply perform better. They have a broader range of ideas. They're not an echo chamber. Diverse teams also have higher collective intelligence. That is different from sort of an individual brilliance. That is sort of collective team intelligence. But of course, that's why we assemble teams, right? Because mm-hmm. we need the skill sets of teams. And of course, also, if you have diverse workplaces, people tend to be more committed, and they're also better at solving problems. So they well-managed diverse teams just perform better.
There was an important modifier in that phrase, though, well-managed diverse teams.
It is an important modifier because if you bring diverse people onto a team who don't share a whole set of cultural assumptions, for example, and you don't manage them in a way that communicates that everyone has been chosen for a specific skill set and is valued for a specific skill set and that the team will be judged on how well they deliver as a team, then the divergences among the diverse people you've hired, that can lead to conflict and corrosion in performance.
Yeah. And organizations have tried to tackle this, but primarily with bias prevention training. Why does that approach not work?
Well, companies have tried to address this through bias trainings, and I frankly think that bias trainings have gotten a bad rap. A single bias training typically doesn't help. And if it's mandatory, it may actually be taking you in the wrong direction. Even an excellent training, that is the kind of training, for example, that we give in our individual bias interrupters training, that really focuses and teaches people how bias plays out in everyday workplace interactions in super concrete ways and has them brainstorm their own bias interrupters. Even that, you can't change a culture by doing anything once, even if it's perfect. And that's really the bottom line about why a single bias training just won't work to address the problem. Because if you have diversity challenges, typically it's because you have these subtle forms of bias constantly being transmitted through your basic business systems.
So let's dig into interrupting bias. The idea is that there's this underlying problem that's really tricky to solve, right? You can't actually make everyone in your organization unbiased. So you need to work around it and sort of create systems and processes that makes the organization more inclusive.
Exactly. There's been a lot of focus because of the implicit association test, the IAT, on changing people's automatic associations. That is extremely difficult. Luckily, it's also not typically required in the workplace. You know, milliseconds matter in many policing situations, but the pace in workplaces is statelier. And so what people need to do is to have the tools to, once that automatic association arises, to provide that cognitive override and go like, no, that's my first reaction. It's not going to be my last reaction.
Okay, so let's start tackling some of those buckets where a good boss can fight bias. First, hiring. What are some ways that if I'm a manager, I can take prejudice out of a process that I didn't set up and make sure that I have a diverse team of people who want to be in it?
Well, first, insist on a diverse pool, and that does not mean just one person of color or woman. One study showed that if there are at least two women in the finalist pool, you're 79 times more likely to end up hiring a woman, and it's even greater for people of color. If there are at least two minority applicants in a finalist pool, you're almost 200 times more likely to end up hiring a minority. So that's the first thing. If you're working with a recruiter, you just have to send really clear messages of these are my expectations. If you're working by yourself, then one of the things to recognize is that although a lot of companies have had a lot of success with referral hiring, the people in your social network tend to be like you. That's the strongest characteristic of social networks. So if you want to reproduce the demography of your current organization, totally rely on referral hiring. But if you don't, you need to be keeping track carefully of which candidates come in through referral hiring and which come in through other avenues. And then look, you know, either it's a problem or it isn't. If it is a problem of having a diverse slate or if hiring through referrals is a problem, then you just need to do a little more work in recruiting from more diverse pools. And in most organizations, it doesn't need to be a heavy lift because there are already organizations, affinity organizations, that can help you broaden your pool. Then there's also a lot of things that you can do that come in. They're super well established from industrial organizational psychology. If you're hiring someone, it really is very important to sit down before you start and list the objective qualifications that the person needs. And then establish a rubric. Doesn't have to be fancy. It's just basically the qualifications. And then list the people based on the rubric as you're going through resumes. And what that does is it interrupts a lot of kind of shifting standards and another pattern called casuistry, where people can unconsciously apply different standards to the majority group and to anyone who's not inside that majority group. And so if you set up criteria, consistently use them, keep track of where they're waived, because there's often a sobering pattern for whom they're waived, that can go a long, long way. Very similar at the interview level. Now, if the interview is going to be just kind of a lunch test of, do I want to go out to lunch with you, that's going to have probably a negative effect, not only by gender and by race, but also it's going to disadvantage first-generation professionals. Because if, you know, if you love hang gliding and somebody grew up in the heartland in a blue-collar family, they probably ain't going to be able to talk about hang gliding with you.
Right.
Also, I mean, hang gliding is not actually typically a job skill. And so, again, the same thing. You need to figure out what are the skills and the qualities that you're looking for. Design interview questions that are designed to test those qualities or those skills. And then ask those questions, actually preferably the research shows in the same order, and grade them immediately on a rubric. And the other thing that's really important is if you're trying to figure out whether someone has a concrete skill, rather than asking them, are you comfortable with Excel, give them data and tell them to do it. Actually, at my organization, we have shifted to skills assessments. And, you know, hiring is always just a bit of a crapshoot, but we have made it far less of a crapshoot.
Yeah. And obviously, the insisting on diverse pools is explicitly linked to bias. But the rest of what you're describing doesn't have to be a big announcement. We're seeking more diversity here. It just has to say we're evaluating everyone on the same criteria.
That's really an important point, that all of these making the system a little bit more formal, it will definitely interrupt prove it again bias for women and people of color. But it will also make sure that you're not selecting people with a very specific class background. And frankly, it will also help people, particularly men, who are more introverted, because they may not, for example, interview as with as much charisma as other people. But for certain job roles, that's actually not that important. Other things are more important. And so if you shift to a system that's just a little bit more analytically designed to choose what you need, surprise, it's, right, you're going to get more of what you need.
Let's move on to day-to-day management. You know, you've hired, ideally, this very diverse team, but then you need to think about work assignments and how you communicate with everyone, how the team communicates together. And this is where you see a lot of bias play out, right? So how do you make sure that it doesn't come in on those issues?
A lot of bias tends to creep in meeting dynamics. One study found that men with expertise tend to be more influential in meetings, but that women with expertise tend to be less influential in meetings. Mm. And why is that? It goes back to the tightrope, which is really my name for what's called prescriptive stereotyping. If you ask most people what a good woman should be, they'll come up with something that boils down to modest, self-effacing, and nice, a good team player. If you ask people, hey, what's a go-getter and a guy, they'll go like direct, competitive, ambitious. And so what happens if a woman has expertise in a context where bias is unchecked, she will find it really hard to speak up and assert herself to bring her expertise to the table without being seen as a prima donna or someone who's difficult or someone who's dominating because of that prescriptive stereotype. We were doing some research in a major STEM facility that involved handling of materials that were highly dangerous. And one woman had caught a mistake in the analysis of one of her male colleagues. And the reaction was so negative. I mean, she was supposed to not be asserting her expertise. She was supposed to be sitting back and being modest, self-effacing and nice. She said, oh, I just keep my mouth shut and bring in cookies. That's clearly what they want me to do. I mean, that in that context, that was like downright dangerous.
Right. Speaking of meetings, when I was working with you on this article, I learned two new words, bropreating and wypeating. I knew manterruption, but can you explain all those to our listeners and how managers can deal with them?
Yeah, there's a simpler name for all of them. We just call it the stolen idea. And in meetings, often white men feel very comfortable jumping in with their ideas at the start. And also, women and people of color report at much higher rates that other people get credit for ideas I originally offered. That's the bropreating or wypeating. Now, typically, this is not done maliciously. Typically, this is done unconsciously because of what's called confirmation bias. You notice the brilliant idea when it's put forward by someone whom you expect to have brilliant ideas. It's been widely discussed about in the gender context. What, like so many of these things, our research finds that it also happens in the racial context. And so as a manager, number one, you just have to watch out for it. And you can interrupt it without embarrassing anyone. You can say something like, you know, Tim, I liked that idea when Pam first said it. You know, you've added something intriguing. You know, I wonder if Pam has the next step. And you can do it in a very gentle way. The other thing you can do is, and this is important actually for three groups. It's important for Asian Americans, it's important for women, and it's important for first-generation professionals. All of those groups were brought up with what's often called the modesty mandate. So, for example, if you have a first-generation Asian American, I mean, they're most likely been brought up in a context where there's a lot of expectation that you don't toot your own horn and you're deferential to those above you. That actually is a challenge for a manager, and it's worth running it through your head and saying, oh, okay, this is a challenge. How am I going to get this person to contribute? Because that's why I hired them. One way to do it, it's very simple. Just ask people to weigh in. You know, Camilla, you have experience with this. What are we missing here? What are your thoughts? And you can even, if the person is super shy, you can even say, you know, I've noticed that you're not jumping in areas that we really need to hear from you. So you can start jumping in, or I can make it a little easier for you by bringing you in. Which would you prefer? So you can work with someone and find a way that they feel comfortable. You can have a norm that whatever your subject you're talking about, the person who's the expert speaks first or speaks last. And then a couple of other things are just to schedule meetings inclusively. So obviously, you know, intense business meetings in the men's locker room, probably not a great idea. Equally unsubtle of always having super important meetings at a time when this is going to be now typically parents, men as well as women, the way they just can't make the meetings either because they're taking the kids to school or picking them up for daycare. This is the kind of thing that can happen unconsciously, but it can have a big effect.
context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, January 31, 2020, so I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast forum on neutralizing workplace racism. This broadcast is not for spectators. If we have, fortunately, any non-white cows listeners, you are not mistreated. You don't deal, what she call it? You don't deal with bias in the workplace. That's not a problem for you. They don't schedule meetings in the men's room. They don't schedule meetings when you have errands to run, if you have to pick your children up from school. That didn't happen to you. You get to speak up in meetings. Nobody steals your ideas. You get credit for them and applause. It's written down and mentioned when you get your spectacular performance reviews, and with a big raise, of course. That's your daily work experience. They call you by your name correctly every time. They spell your name correctly every time. When you have email or text communications, they include you when there's information about meetings. They give you credit when you come up with an idea. If you're leading a project, they don't come in and sit in your seat. They don't come in and take over the presentation when you're the one that's supposed to be in the lead and is actually scheduled to give the talk. They don't do any of that. If you have figured out how to get to that position, please do not be a spectator. We need to hear from folks like that, if such people exist. We need to hear from non-white people like that. The number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly do not be a spectator if you aren't being subjected to bias, white supremacy, racism in the workplace. As always, if we have listeners, if you are being subjected to bias, white terrorism in the workplace, certainly you can dial in, let us know, and we will do our best to use counter-racist logic to try to solve problems without creating new problems. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Many things to share this week. My goodness, emails, all kinds. Number one, the Cows Yoga Retreat, Toronto, May 21st through May 24th. Get your passport. We are at about halfway. I did not write on the blog post that has all the information about the yoga retreat. I did not write and or I have not stated the number. What is the capacity for the yoga retreat? It would have to be a finite number because yoga retreats are not supposed to be large events. Like, you're not supposed to have 50, even 40, 30 people together. I am aware of, you know, like day retreats and things sometimes where it might be 30 people or so, but that's kind of big. Like, staying together for 3-4 days, I think that's should be like a more intimate setting. And Gus T is still a curmudgeon, so yes, we would have to have a capacity I think could be no greater than 14. 14 people would be capacity probably for all of the retreats henceforward. It would take a special environment, a special situation for that number to go much higher than about 14 for one retreat. Anyway, so the capacity for Toronto, 14 people. We are about at the halfway point, so if you think you would like to go, the deadline is still February 29th. Or I guess if we get to 14 before then I'll let you know. But the deadline to register is February 29th. The deposit, $400, and then you can pay the remaining $260 May 1 for the COWS Counter-Racist Yoga Retreat in Toronto, May 21 through May 24. But we're about the halfway point, still looking surprisingly like a pseudo-couples retreat, and the numbers because of that are pretty balanced, male and female, as it has been for the other two. Retreats, but couples. How interesting. Toronto, looking forward to it. Spring, May 2020. Get your passport. Alrighty, so the audio clip that we heard at the beginning from the Harvard Business Review, the HBR cast. Every time that I hear a segment from that podcast, I feel so much better about the content that we do here at the COW, specifically for neutralizing workplace racism, because I feel like we have just that they spent 20 minutes talking about bias. We spend weekly 3 hours talking about neutralizing workplace racism. Words are important. The titles alone tell you a lot about, you know, how serious we are about addressing this problem and using logic, being accurate in addressing this problem. But every time I hear them, I feel so much better about what we're doing here at the COWS. I feel like we should play their content every week or as often as possible. So that was Joan Williams, a white woman, suspected racist, unless I've been misinformed. She is the founder of the Center for Work-Life Law at the University of California's Hastings College. Founder. They have a Center for Work-Life Law, and they spell work-life as one word. Work-life together, one word, no hyphen. All that talk about bias. B-I-A-S. Bias. No idea what that is. We talk about neutralizing workplace racism, white supremacy. She says that the problem sometimes in not having a diverse employees, a diverse field of potential applicants, is that sometimes we're looking for people that, you know, we have similarities, we have things in common, you know. I grew up hang gliding, you don't hang glide, so maybe we don't have the same interest. We have our power walking group, and you don't power walk, so yeah, I might not hire you because, you know, we don't have similar interests. That is absolute malarkey. That is a white woman practicing white supremacy racism deliberately as it relates to, if that's what you're saying about why white people don't hire black people to do jobs, that is nonsense of the highest order. You say that, oh, well, we golf, you know, sometimes we go out and we do our 18 holes and we discuss our business strategy or potential mergers and things. And since you don't golf, you know, you can't. They mistreat Tiger Woods. They have the story where he was tied to a tree, beaten and called a nigger. The NFL. You have black people. We played together. You watched me get brain damage. Some of them won a Super Bowl for you, and they got what they call it, the Rooney Rule. We at least got a few things in common. I'm a black guy. You're a white guy. We both like football. That's one. We both enjoy a little brain damage. Maybe we both got a little brain damage. That's two. We like violence. That's three. So we got several things in common. And I still can't get a job in the NFL. They spent the whole month whining. Man, the white commissioner, he came out as a man. We have not done a good job in hiring niggers. Man, I don't know how they got that fella down in Pittsburgh, but it just seems we just can't get the niggers through the. What's the excuse there? Bias? Dedication to white supremacy racism. They always got an excuse for why we can't. They hire white women now to coach football and basketball. You can get a white woman. That's what they got in that segment. Women and minorities. Oh, that is so flagrant. If you listen to the COWS, that is one thing. Every single time, every so because it's totally illogical, and the nonsense of it came out in that segment. What are you saying when you say women and minorities? Are you suggesting that all minorities are males? What are you saying? The only way that that makes, and I mean the only way it even begins to make white women and minorities, and then that would make it even more flagrant. It's like, wait a minute. I think even most victims that are very confused, I think they would even take a pause like, really? Do I think white women are treated the same way as non-white? Like, really? Really? I just said white women don't have a job, have a difficult time getting hired in the NFL or the NBA nowadays. They brag about hiring white women. I haven't seen one photograph of a black female getting hired in the NFL or the NBA. I've seen quite a few of white women getting those jobs, and they brag about it. They're proud of it. Can't even find a black male to get ahead of. You don't have any black males that play football? Really? Nobody is quite. Next. So they said in the, they said men with expert every time. What I say last week, you only got one man on the planet. That man is classified as white. You only got one woman. That's another reason it should say white woman every time. You only got one woman on the planet. That woman is white. They said men should have been white men with expertise are able to speak up in meetings and be loud. Women with expertise are less influential. That is a total lie in my experience. Joan Williams is a white woman. She is the founder of the Center for Work-Life Law at the University of California's Hastings College. It sounds like she has a lot of influence. She was on the Harvard Business Review podcast for a half an hour talking about her views inaccurately, I might add, giving misinformation and or practicing racism, white supremacy deliberately, in my view. That is a lot of influence. That is standard. That is what I have observed for years on the plantation. In fact, I said this is so nonsensical. If we were talking about the book publishing industry, wouldn't make sense at all, because white women dominate. When you start talking about getting your name on a book jacket, they had whole articles. We just talked about it with the whole racism with the Writers Guild, writers organization here in the U.S., where they were accused of practicing racism. That's all white women. White women dominate the publishing industry. White women dominate the classroom all the way up to the university and the academies. White women dominate. This conversation wouldn't even make sense saying men, men, men. And she's not even adding the descriptor white men, because I am very sure in a system of racism, white supremacy, that black males with expertise are not, oh, you can just go in and speak up and be a go-getter and say what you want. I know that's not the case, because we had Allison Manswell on the program 2016, same year as Alton Sterling, Philando Castile were executed. Allison Manswell, she came up because she was talking about their execution, and while she was saying those conversations might come up in the workplace, she also said, I feel like I have to tell black males to emasculate themselves in the workplace. Don't raise your voice. Don't be a go-getter. Don't feel like you can flex your expertise. Don't stand too close to people. You might be intimidating. That's what she said in 2016. So I know it's not men with expertise. It's white men. And sometimes you don't even have to have expertise. And it's white women, and the same thing. Sometimes they don't even have to have expertise. We've had a number of folks who called in about that. They said, what is a good woman? That's another one. You got to put what's a good white woman, because I have no idea what the response would be. What is a good colored woman? What's a good nigger woman? Fill in the blank for the racist joke. They meant what is a good white woman. And then I pause, since they keep saying women and minorities. Well, what's a good woman? What's a good nigger? Let's take the gender out of it completely. What's a good nigger? Insert racist joke there. The importance, bias, not racism, emphasized already. Also, I did think it was important. That was about the only thing, and they didn't really give much detail on this. They said at the very beginning, they listed different ways that so-called bias can create problems in the workplace. And one that was mentioned, it was number 4, was creating conflict within women and minorities. And they gave a little bit of detail, but they moved on to that one. I thought that was important because that happens. We talked about that on the program a lot, Mr. Fuller's elevator insults and all of that, where non-white people end up being in conflict with each other on the workplace. And that's been orchestrated by white people. Even sometimes they'll promote a non-white person so that this person, he or she, can just fuss at the other non-white subordinates. Lots of different ways that they do this. They said interrupt bias. Again, this program is called Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Joan Williams is suggesting interrupting bias, whatever that means. She said they gave an example. Oh, man, that was so important. They gave an example. They said that because you got the white men with expertise, allegedly, and so white women allegedly don't feel comfortable speaking up or don't feel heard in meetings or their ideas are stolen, allegedly. And so they got a white woman who said, I just keep my mouth shut and bring in cookies. When I heard that, I didn't think, oh, that's so sad. Oh, I feel so bad for what I thought was, I think that moron comes on this here program regularly and says, man, don't you put a crumb in your mouth in the workplace. I have seen the vindictiveness of white people in the workplace. And frankly, I've seen where non-white people can be vindictive, too. If this here white woman thinks, oh, they don't listen to my ideas, I speak up and they steal them, or I'm not heard at all, I'm not viewed as an expert, just go home and bake these do not eat anything that is brought in to the workplace. No telling what's in those cookies. She's mad at everybody. I'm going to bring these. I'm good. And especially when you add that, that's just the way my mind works. Maybe that's not logical, but that seems super logical to me. These folks aren't exactly friendly. I'm going to bake these cookies with some love who I feel exploit me and ignore me on a regular basis. Anyway, I coupled that when we have folks who have called in, written in repeatedly about them forcing the food on you. You come in, oh no, I'm good at this. Oh no, you got to have a cookie. You got to have a cookie. And we're going to start a petition. We need to get a petition going. Negro's got to eat the cookies. You can't come in. That sort of thing. I'm good. I'm not eating anything and I have my excuses ready to roll. I'm gluten free. I'm lactose intolerant. I'm on the keto diet. I'm vegetarian. I'm vegan. They would just keep on rolling. I'm fasting. It would just keep on rolling. I'm not eating anything. It's just tea. Oh, I'm on a water fast for the day. I can't do it. Thank you. They said, importantly, she was talking about all these different ways, not being listened to, you get interrupted, they steal your ideas, all of these different things that happen to women and minorities. And then she said that this is widely discussed in the gender context, meaning how white women are supposedly victims. But this also happens in a racial context. That's what I mean about how this is, in my view, this is deliberate white deception. You got a white woman. How are you telling me white women don't have influence and are subject to all this bias? You're the founder of the Center for Work-Life Law at the University of California's Hastings College. You're the founder. What do you mean white women are subjected to all this? Get out. You're not an anomaly. Make sure what I just said, that's not an anomaly. It's tons of white women just like you who dominate the academy, dominate the publishing industry, dominate the NFL. You can't even get a job for a black. Continuing. I'll leave that segment. There were lots of things I could say about that segment. Even the fact that this white man, I'm sure, gets paid thousands and thousands. I would love to see what her salary is. It's probably public. If you have extra time, you can look and see what Joan Williams, see what her salary is, Center for Work-Life Law. If her salary is public, I'm sure unless she thinks that she's being underpaid. I don't know, but I would love to see what her salary is to see if this is a poorly white woman who is not being well compensated and subjected to some form of bias. Now I can move on from that. In the workplace, I think we were on yesterday. Yesterday was the first time that we were on. Since the untimely passing of Kobe Bryant, his daughter, seven other passengers on board, I didn't really intend to do program or have anything to say about it, I would say in a workplace racism context, I would not discuss that in the workplace. I think in general, I think Thomas in New York, and I think some other listeners have expressed the code of not discussing sports at all in the workplace. This would fall under that rubric for many reasons. I think it's just one where I would not want it. I would expect tackiness from whites at all times. And it's just not something where I would feel at a time. I've just seen too many illustrations where a black person dies and it veers off into something tacky. I've seen too many times where something with sports, it veers off into something tacky. And I've seen too many times where with Kobe Bryant, it veers off into something tacky. Somehow now we have to talk about him raping a white woman. And I just would not have anything to say about it. It would be, I'm not really a basketball fan. I saw him in passing, but I just wasn't, you know, big away. I've seen people talking about it or what have you, but I just didn't follow all that, keep up with all that. Back to workplace conversations, so that we're not going to get into a dialogue. I'm not, and especially I would not be interested in a white person putting on some sort of charade that they're really shook up and hurt about this because they love the Lakers. Like, that would be kind of repulsive to me as well. There are too many illustrations of racists. They can enjoy more claim, allege that they enjoy seeing Michael Jordan or whoever the person, if for whatever era it is, Bo Jackson, Dr. J, Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson, they enjoy seeing them for, you know, those few minutes. And then it's back to nigger this, nigger that for the rest of it. Something would repulse me about that, that I'm going to listen to a white person allege that they have so much concern for Kobe Bryant. And I would not want to entertain that on my work time at all. Like, I got to go to the bathroom. I'm sure you'll get through it. We'll talk later. Like, I would be out of that conversation super fast. Hope that has not happened to anyone in your work situation. I would think that would probably be a bigger case for people who live in, in fact, I know it'd be a bigger case for people who live in the California area, probably Philadelphia as well. Let's see. Two more things. I have to go first for workplace racism. I have to talk long enough at the start of the program that I might have to take a commercial break to get water. The first one, we had a listener with a question, and there was lots of feedback. So I'll share, and then if people have any other thoughts, they can share. So I'll read this one. Person wrote in, first and foremost, I want to thank you for the podcast. It is full of useful information on how to navigate racism, white supremacy in the workplace. She didn't say navigate bias, thankfully. I would like to run a few things by you and your audience and seek some guidance. I'm in the process of looking for another job. However, I have a very obvious non-white name. I feel that my name is impacting my ability to get my foot in the door for the interview process. I am considering changing my name, not because I am ashamed, but because I feel like my resumes will be automatically trashed. Do you think I should consider changing my name to increase my job prospects? It is definitely not a decision I take lightly, but I don't feel that I can get past the resume bias. Oh, there it is again. But he did say white supremacy, racism at the beginning. Let's see. All right. So I said a number of people responded already. I have to scroll over. I attempted to use social media in a constructive manner. So I posted on social media the question and lots of people responded. So I will go through and read. Even more people responded. All right. To be honest, discrimination will happen. We cannot avoid it. Even when hired, the mistreatment will be there. True. I honestly cannot answer. I do not know. I will say that the trucking industry will give you a chance. That was end of comment. All logical. I think reparations will solve this problem. Not sure how that would solve this problem. Not sure what you mean by reparations. I know some people mean a sum of money. Some people mean solving problems. Replacing white supremacy with justice, I think, would solve this problem. I am not sure how, quote unquote, reparations would solve the problem of a person not getting a job. But BGQ. Next, middle name. A person can try using their middle name if they think their name is too black sounding. I wouldn't change my name, though. Next person. No, do not change your name. If they don't hire an applicant because of a name, it's not a place they want to be. That's not a place they want to work anyway. But if they get past the interview and don't get it, always request feedback on what contributed to their hiring decision. I always use the opportunity to ask them questions. Bravo. It's usually really revealing. Next, abbreviate the first name. Include middle name, nickname, or pseudonym. And the person gave different examples of how that could be done. And they added, I've recommended R.G. Brooks, K.D. Johnson. An astute HR person might assume that the applicant might be trying to hide their gender and be more sympathetic to the resume. Now, I wasn't even thinking about that, but that absolutely could be the trace. Just going with the initials. Let's see. Yeah, that's all gone. Okay. Next person wrote, I changed my name on a resume when I showed up. Woo, all laughs. I can imagine. That's what I think the other person was alluding to by, I wouldn't change my name. If them seeing your name is enough for them to not hire you, then that, you know, it might not be a place you want to work. Next, even if he altered his name, it won't change the look that shows up to the interview. Just wait 3 days after submitting the resume to call their human resources and ask if your inquiry is being considered. Then call every other day for about a week. No hear from, move on. Do that with all the places you submit your resume to. Logical. Do not change your name. I'm speaking to you as a person named Ademu Jua and have had it since birth. Not a compromise we should make ever. Next, black self-respect. I don't pronounce my name with a proper accent because fear was put into me as a child. It's unfortunate. However, building confidence in it might get them through the interview process. However, receiving the interview in the first place is the conundrum. Absolutely. Next person. Absolutely not. I'm a recruiter, and if I see a black sounding name and the resume looks good, they are at the top of my list. I just hired someone with a blackity black sounding okay, blackity black sounding name, and I'm sure he's been looked over because of it, but I found him in a sea of resumes and hired him. Well, how about that? That is blackity black self-respect. That is about half. Let's see. The rest of them. Where are the rest of the responses? Okay. Rest of the responses. Oh, wow. It even grew. File a complaint. We don't need to change. The racists are the ones who need to change. I'm not sure who you would be filing a complaint with. Maybe EEOC. Filing a report. If they choose to do that, VGQ, get it how you get it. Desperate measures call for desperate times. I would change my name to Rusty Flores if it would get me unblocked from getting decent job interviews. And they actually hashtagged black self-respect. We did have examples of how you could change your name, initials and such. Use initials and last name. Got that again. I would suggest that changing their name wouldn't prevent a suspected white supremacist from a hiring manager from taking notice of them being a non-white person during an in-person interview. But if they insist on changing their name, it would be productive. Then it's VGQ. No, I would not change my name. Next, is there a way he can anglicize the name on his resume to get in the door? For example, I know a non-white female named Conception, but uses Connie, and other non-whites do the same. It can be unofficial with real name on official paperwork once hired if goal is simply to get an interview. Very logical. She could always just shorten parts of his name. Like how people from the dominant society use Bill for William, Jeff for Jeffrey, Marty for Martin, etc. They also use their middle name as their first name in many cases. You could work with them for years and never know. That is true. I consider applying for any job, fast food, temp, laborer, garbage truck, etc. And if that doesn't get me an interview, I consider relocating to an area where there are more people with names like mine that are employed. That's if you have the time, resources, of course. Use an initial. Change first name on resume and just use real name as middle initial. All sound, or most of those sound pretty logical. If any other folks have any suggestions on what you would do if you think that is what is keeping you from getting an interview or might be part of what's causing a problem for you in terms of being hired, your name, feel free. I know we had Yolanda Spivey, black female, as a guest on the program in December of 2011, way, way back. I went back in the archives and had to go back and re-upload it today. But she did this whole big report. It got a lot of attention. She wrote it up as an essay where she basically did an experiment. She was sending out resumes. She wasn't getting any, same thing. She wasn't getting calls, anything like that. She changed her resume to a white sounding name. And she got flooded with calls instantaneously. All the same, exact, like identical credentials and everything else. And people calling her for these interviews. Is it, what do you think this is? Is this bias? And all this other. Anyway, it's in the archives, December 2011. That experiment, all of this also reminded me of my yoga practice, yoga career. There is a non-white female I know, non-black non-white yoga instructor that I know who was pregnant while I was going through teacher training. In fact, she was teaching. She was, I think, like in her second trimester, like she was showing and still teaching and what have you. I remember going through teacher training with her. Anyway, she said after she successfully had a healthy baby and everything's great, but she said she had been mispronouncing her own name to conform to white people, and she said white people specifically, she had been mispronouncing her own name apparently for years to conform to white people mispronouncing her name for years. And she said after she had the birth of her child, she said, you know what? I'm going to stop that. This is the correct way to say my name. I was getting this information because I had been, you know, calling her. I had been mispronouncing her name like everyone else. And so I was being told like, oh, yeah, her name is actually boop. And she said, yeah, she's been mispronouncing it and she's going to stop doing that. And she wants her name pronounced correctly. It's like that is it's amazing on both fronts. Like, wow. Bias. White supremacy racism is extraordinary. I mean, certainly you want to be hired. You want to get a job. That's the whole purpose of this broadcast, to try to keep the job that you have when a system of racism that demands you do something with your time and energy. But I mean, wow, I can't just be I'm qualified and competent and willing to show up on time and all of that. No, I just got to go through all this and I got to change my name around And then even you get through all that and then you still want to get there and call me pimpin' and make up little nicknames and ditties for me and not pronounce my name correctly. I think we had that from a non-Clemson grad just within the last couple of days or so. He dialed in on workplace racism and was saying that it was in the emails. They wouldn't even spell his name correctly for all that tackiness. Anyway, folks have any other thoughts on that, feel free. Much obliged for the person who wrote in. I'm going first on workplace racism today, sticking with the yoga theme. Wow. I wish I emailed Zima, or I messaged her before the program. It was sometime in the last year or so. Since I was going through teacher training and all that, it takes a lot of time. The yoga practice is lots of time invested in that over the last 2 years. Sometime in that period, we had a Cows listener. I said, man, Gus, I feel like we're losing you to yoga. You know, you're not even here anymore doing your counter-racist job. You're off messing around yoga studio, lose you to the white folks doing yoga. And I laughed, and I if I could have pinpointed that audio segment for today, I would have paused to give myself a commercial interlude to take a sip of water and to get in a good cackle. And then I would unmute it and boop, we could proceed. But that is, it is hilarious in so many ways. Now being able to reflect in about a billion different ways, like the idea that I would be able to retire or relieve myself from counter-racist duties at the cows or otherwise, and just go off to retire to hanging out and doing yoga with white women mostly, and white men, been quite a few of them as well, in Seattle. Like, it's beyond laughable. Anyway, so the next chapter in why that is beyond laughable. So 2 weeks ago, Michelle Cassandra Johnson was a guest on The Cows. Legendary, historic broadcast for so many reasons now. So I said that the white woman who hired Gus T, Carrie Johnson, she had a signed copy of her book. I put down, I'd said I'm infamous in the yoga community, proper use, in these parts, just for being a Negro. They don't have a whole lot of black people here in Seattle, and they definitely do not have a lot of black people doing yoga, and they definitely do not have a lot of black males who do yoga, much less are instructors. So, you know, very, 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 very small number. Stick out. And then I wear my, you know, please treat me like I am a white person T-shirt to class and all the rest of it. And now I have some proficiency. I mean, as an instructor, I have some proficiency. So if you can do handstands and that sort of thing, that would kind of stick out anyway in class. And then to be a nigger male with all of that, like, woo. Anyway, so I am infamous. In the yoga world, I'd said that from the very beginning, like, I'm not sure if I would be able to work or even would want to, how much I would want to do this in these super white environments, super racist environments. I've said that, you know, for a long time. I shared the information about the podcast because I've talked about it throughout my yoga experience. I've said, stand by your work. I think that's what I've said the whole time. And I've also said, hey, no secrets on the plantation. If white people really want to know information about you, they will find out. I went through teacher training. I think I had my shirt on, my counter-racist T-shirt on. We had a white woman there who said, you're Gus T? I said, absolutely, that would be me during teacher training. So that's the way that I function the entire time that I've been teaching yoga. There will be no change in my code about that as long as I'm practicing yoga for a litany of counter-racist reasons. I shared the information with Carrie Johnson, the white woman who hired me to teach yoga about, you know, I do the podcast, Context of White Supremacy. And I specifically shared the episode about us talking about yoga and racism, the one with Satya X, black female. She does the women of color healing retreats in Costa Rica. She was with us in February of 2018. But that program specifically, because we talked about both she and I wasn't even an instructor at that point. We both talked about how we had been terrorized by white women and how unwelcome the environment, the yoga environment is for black people, non-white people in general. I sent her that program, and I remember, I think I talked about it on Workplace Racism. It would take a minute for me to pinpoint it, but I think around November or so, I think I came on and I said, like, I sent that episode specifically. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be hired. Like, I don't think that it'll work out, but, you know, oh well, keeping it moving. And I did get hired. That was, or I guess maybe October that was. Somewhere in there, October, November, it should be in the archives. Anyway, so I was very aware this white woman, she knows about the program. She might be listening. Psh, that is the system of white supremacy. Michelle Cassandra Johnson was on the program 2 weeks ago. This white woman, Carrie Johnson, who hired me, she had a copy of her book. And I told her, I'll see if we can get her on the program. She appeared 2 weeks ago. My white boss, she emails me to say, oh, man, you had Miss Johnson on the program, and she sends me a different name of another black person who I'd never heard of. I assume that this is a black person who does yoga. I'm not sure. It's a black female, though. But she sends me this black person's Facebook page or what have you. Like, you know, this is an idea. Maybe you should check out. Now, my thought process is I do not produce the context of white supremacy for white people. That is very explicit. That's been written in the description of the cows for years, that this content is created for non-white people, victims of white supremacy. We have had racists, Timothy Wise and others, who have listened to an episode or several episodes to do recon, sometimes just to be disruptive. We've had racists who've called in and leave racist jokes and things over the years, but I've been very explicit about that. And my thought was, I am not cool with a suspected racist, my boss, like, just listening to the podcast. Is this listening for surveillance? Because she had mentioned Carrie Johnson, suspected racist. She had mentioned that she's trying to learn the standard line that white people say. She's trying to learn about racism. She mentioned some other podcasts, and she had a signed copy of Michelle Cassandra Johnson's book, Skill in Action. She had a signed copy of the book, and, you know, it was like, hey, this is, they have, you know, talk, they have like a diversity committee at the studio and everything. So she's like, I'm trying to learn. I don't know. In fact, we had an explicit conversation where she said, I don't know enough about social justice and all that to be more vocal and spearhead an effort to address that standard line that white people spew. In my view, again, what I've said for more than a decade, white people cannot be ignorant about white supremacy racism. So I'm going to write her back. I go to reply, and I'm going to, you know, I do not make content for white people. Like, something just seems incorrect about that. Is this surveillance on an employee so you can keep tabs on another employee and what they're doing and what their views are? And I was like, I was just going to tell her, like, man, I do not. I reject that you are ignorant about racism and you need to listen to my podcast to inform you about racism. Like, that is ridiculous. And so I have the reply screen up, and I get like a sentence into it. And I said, you know, I need to tell her this in person. Like, this is not a email thing. Like, this is I can sit down and tell you face to face. Like, yeah, this is, I do not make the context of white supremacy for white yoga females or males who say that they're ignorant and that they're trying to learn about racism. That is not my intent, and you're not an invited listener. Like, because I mean, I only gave her that information for employment verification, not, you know, you to sign up, you're now going to consider yourself a listener. So I pause on the reply screen and I say, I'm not going to email her. I'll see her. This was Wednesday night, Thursday morning of last week, Wednesday night, Thursday morning. And I say, I'll see her this weekend. I'll tell her in person. I go on the weekend, Sunday. I go, I'm supposed to teach this class at late in the afternoon on Sunday. And so I go to teach, get there that afternoon. I get there early, as I always do, get there early. And I go walk in. I see her white husband, Steve. He's sitting at the front desk, and I'm not on the schedule. Like, it's totally changed. Like, what's going on? And I go in, like, where's Carrie? She, contrary to what we heard in the segment about women and minorities, the person who is in charge here is the white woman, Carrie Johnson. In fact, one of the best lines that I heard the entire time, she, white husband, was there. White husband comes out, and he was being asked to do something small. And he said, man, I'm a part owner here, yet it seems like I'm always just being told what to do. And I cracked up laughing. In fact, everybody laughed. And then he was promptly told, yes, now go over here. But women and minorities are having problems. That's what they say. Anyway, so I go in, Steve, I'm not on the schedule. What's going on? He says, oh, just check your email. I'm like, excuse me? And he's like, just check your email. Yes. I'm like, dang, I've been here. I interned here. I've been working here since September. Intern started in September, began working, paid employee since November. I'm being treated like, I stole from the company or something. Like I looted the petty cash jar or some craziness. So I'm like, okay, I'll check my email. So I get up. He doesn't even speak. Like it's the most gruff interaction that I've had like the entire time that I've known him. Not that we're friends or homies. Be very clear about that. I think I said some weeks back, I said I stopped practicing publicly because at this studio where I was employed, and I was an employee at the time, stopped practicing publicly, stopped practicing with white people after I was told that a white male student yelled at me about breathing too loudly in class. That was the final straw, as I explained on the program. And I asked Michelle Cassandra Johnson about that. In fact, I asked her how would she handle if a student yelled at another student in class for whatever reason. That was the context that we talked about it in. And I said, wow, for her, the white people at the studio to get upset or find fault with that, feel some type of way around that, to where I would be taken off the schedule. They wouldn't even talk to me in person, like no phone call. I have a phone. I think I talked about that 2 months back or so on the program. It hadn't even been that long, but I have a phone. They have my number. Like if it was, we're concerned about no phone call, just to be totally kicked to the curb. You're out of here via email. Like, oh, it was so tacky. And in fact, it was so tacky, I can rewind to the exact moment when we had the discussion about being accused of breathing too loud in class. I came in, I didn't teach that day. I came into practice of my own volition, my own free time, came into practice, leave. Nobody says anything to me. The instructor doesn't say anything to me. I come back. We're supposed to discuss my resume. We had talked about it. Supposed to go over what I can do to polish up and sharpen my resume. And instead we spend like 30 minutes talking about you breathe too loud in class and you don't always follow the instructors, the instructions for what the posture is going to be in class. And I just remember sitting there like, wow, it feels like I got in trouble. Like I got fired on my day off for breathing too loud in a yoga class. Like that was the feeling I had. And I remember it like it was, you have those moments when time like slows down, like because it was so stunning. Like I came to talk about my resume and it feels like I'm being admonished for breathing too loud in class. I literally felt like the God awful movie Friday, where it starts at the beginning. Ice Cube is talking to Chris Tucker and he says, how did you get fired on your, that is exactly how I felt. Like, how did you get fired on your day off? Like, I just went to take a yoga class. I wasn't even teaching. And lo and behold, that happened. She get fired and it wasn't even a day I was working. Like, man, like I don't even have a cool story to attach to it. Like, man, I was stealing yoga blocks from the place and I got caught. Like, or I pilfered the petty cash or anything. I don't even have anything cool like that that I can attach to it, that she listened to our podcast with Michelle Cassandra Johnson and fired me for us talking about them not allowing me to breathe in class or fussing at me for breathing too loudly in class. And I said, man, wait till I email Michelle Cassandra Johnson. Wait till I talk to her. Not that we're best friends or anything, because we're not, but wait till I email her and tell her this is the conduct of a white woman who has a signed copy of your book. Wait till I email her and tell her what happened from the program. Not that, like I said, we're not homies, we're not best friends or anything, but whoo, I cannot wait. I've been sick. I told you all I was sick for about 2 weeks, so I'm just, getting myself back together, but man, oh man, that is helping to get me energized. I'm going to email Miss Johnson so that she knows what happened. I'm also going to email the black female that she suggested that I get on the program to also let her know what happened just with these well-meaning white people, white women in this case, who do the yoga thing and then have these workshops and all where they pretend that they are against racism. They're about diversity and making it inclusive for black people to practice when that is not the case at all. Yeah, it's just, you know, tacky is an understatement. Although, like I said, I did feel very Friday-ish, very, I forget Ice Cube's character, but man, that is, I feel like that is special. Like any time where you can be fired on your day off for something that you did on your day off, like, woo, wow, that is an accomplishment. Chris Tucker, insert joke. At any rate, as the same thing that I say always, have your resume up to date. And you should not be totally blindsided. Like, I went into teaching the entire time. As I said, I have been infamous throughout the time that I have been practicing yoga, just because they don't have a lot of black males. So I have no illusion that I can, you know, go with spook who sat by that. That is not possible at all with this. I don't know if there are other fields that are similar to that, where there are so few black people, or maybe so few black males or so few black females that, you know, if you do that, you'll be the only one and that you will stick out. I don't know if there are other fields that are like that, but that is definitely something to take note of. I guess it may or may not discourage you from doing that. If it's something that you're passionate about, I would say do it, but that is something to be to just acknowledge. And that's why I say pretty ruthlessly, there are no secrets. System of racism, white supremacy, be public. Anything that you say public, be willing to stand by your work. Things that you do publicly. Also, I think why I say in terms of social media, I would not share. Now, I'm kind of in a special situation because this, the context of white supremacy has been what I've been doing for so long. And unfortunately, there are people in the Seattle area who do know, oh, yes, that's Gus with the cows, because we've been here so long. We started broadcasting at the University of Washington. So you lose some of that anonymity, you know, after a decade. Stand by your work. That is a huge part of counter racism. Have no illusions about that. And it's, you can do everything correctly. Say that regularly on the broadcast. You can do everything according to your counter racist code. Really, you can do everything according to what you're supposed to do with the job policy and still be terminated, because we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. But you should not be blindsided by things. And what I mean by that, I think it was within the last 10 days, sometimes if you know you're going to be out, if you're going to take a vacation, they'll send out an email and request a substitute. I'm not going to be here on this Sunday. I'm going to be watching the Super Bowl. Can I get a sub for my class? A person sent out a sub request for, like, I'm going to say like March 31st or something like that. It was something like considerably down the, like, substantially further along than most of the sub requests you get. Most of the time, it'll just be within the next month or so, within the next 45 days, not 2-3 months ahead of time. And I took one of the sub opportunities that was coming up for the next like week or so, but the one for March, I didn't even respond, even though that was a time slot where I could have taught. And I didn't respond because I said, I'm not sure if I'll be here at that time. Like, that was my thought process. Not that I was thinking, you know, they'll kick me out and I'll be fired, which certainly could happen. I, you know, think that every day. But I was thinking, I'm not sure if I will be working here by my own volition. Like, I'm updating my resume. Like, yeah, I can be looking for other opportunities. Like, this was not a location that I said, oh, yeah, I see myself working here for the next year, the next 5 years. Like, this was not that at all. I wanted to get experience, which I got. There were a few things I was not able to take advantage of. So we're supposed to have free, like, studio time to do pictures. And that was something that I should have done. Like, that was something that I wanted to do immediately. Like, try to take advantage of all the resources that were offered with that. And I just wasn't able to make the time to go take some, like, high quality studio pictures. Like, if you're going to be serious about teaching yoga, like, you want to have a web page and, you know, cards and all that, you know, stuff to support your practice, even if it's not yoga, but all the things to support you growing your business, growing your brand. And I thought, man, I'll have a great, you know, set so I can get a few pictures in, and failed at making time to do that. But most of the resources, things that I wanted to get, experience teaching on a regular basis, experience teaching in a studio, getting critiques so that I could get better as a teacher, getting confidence as a teacher, filling out my resume. I was able to get most of the things that I wanted to get done, including the experience of seeing, you know, how much would I enjoy teaching in a studio. And when I got scolded for breathing too loudly in class, that, I mean, I ask myself questions, and I think you should too in your workplace situation. The question I asked myself was, now, do you really want to work in a place where you don't feel safe or comfortable practicing? And the answer immediately was no. That's why I said I did not take that sub opportunity that was for March, because it was, I'm not sure if I'll be working here at that time. You always want to be able to set up a situation and leave on your own terms and have a plan and all that. But we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. So certainly always, always logical to think whites might totally disrupt that. Anything could happen. I could come in and, you know, all of my stuff is thrown out in a box. Can also say, Gusty, following his own recommendation, I did not have a paperclip. I did not have a stray sock left at the studio. I've talked about that all the time, where you don't want to have pictures and I got to come back and get all my mats and pictures and all of that nonsense. Like, this is not my home. This is a place where I'm allowed to work or do whatever for the time that I'm here, and that can be taken away abruptly. So thankfully, followed my own advice on that one. I had nothing to retrieve. Resume up to date. I do not want to teach in any more studios, which is something I'm almost sad to say, because I spent so much time practicing and developing a lot of my practice in studios. But I do not, unless it was exclusively non-white people, and I would even have pause there for reasons I've already talked about. But yeah, I do not think I will be teaching in any more studios there. I talked about the cruise. If I can locate 3-month cruise where you get to teach yoga, maybe one or two classes a day, and then chill the rest of the time is free time, I would do that. If folks have any free time, if you find any yoga cruise teaching jobs, like 2 months, 3 months, that is something I would at least like to check out one time. I feel like that could be a lot of counter-racist work. Do a little teaching, get that experience, get some travel time in. I'll have my passport and come back and report. Or I could report while we're doing it. But that is one. Something like that, or just different opportunities where I'm not teaching in a studio. Just, I feels like it would just be more of white people being really treacherous and racist in a variety of ways. And it wouldn't be a situation, like, I feel like so much of teaching in a yoga studio is white people at least pretending and doing a lot of the fake bonding, and we're going to hang out and all of that. And that's so obviously not going to be the case with me as a nigger male. So yeah, I don't really want to get into it. Would have to be teaching environments where you're teaching where there is none of that. You just come in, you teach, and are out. Pop-up spots, they call it, that type of thing. No teaching in yoga studios. Woof. Anyway, all of that happened. I will be updating the description for the Michelle Cassandra Johnson broadcast to reflect that Carrie Johnson came in to listen to that and kicked me to the curb from teaching there as a result of listening to that podcast, so that that will be reflected. And I will be following up on her suggestions. Hopefully that'll be upcoming broadcasts where we can make sure they are duly noted for their, what I believe to be obvious, white supremacist conduct. Anywho, the number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-#, press *61 if you would like to participate. I had totally forgotten about it. I was going to include the audio segment from Friday where there's it's at the beginning where he says, "How did you get fired on your day?" I was totally going to include it, and then I forgot about it. Have to bring it up next time. Anywho, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Oh, wait, I forgot. You have to give me three more minutes to finish my workplace racism. Man, I thought about it. I always love to do the contrast. I got fired on my day off before Carrie Johnson, suspected racist, before she sent the email that, "Oh, I see you had Michelle Cassandra Johnson on the program." Before she sent that email, the email that came out before that was an email that, wait a minute, total staff email. We've got to have total staff retraining. People have been double entering students for classes. So if a person, if say student's name is Sierra Smith would be entered twice on the roll for the class. That's what she meant. She says people have been double entering students' names for class, and this is potentially fraud, because, you know, this could mean that a student is being charged two times for the class. And it also means if you're having students' names, the same students' names, entered multiple times for a class, this could be falsely inflating the population for the class. Like where there were 15 people there, and because, you know, five or six people's names were double entered, it looks like there were 22 students present for the class. She was saying as a result of that, some people may have gotten a performance bonus. You get a bonus if you have a popular class, if a lot of people come. So she says it, some people may have gotten a bonus that was not earned because of people's names being double entered. So this is all, you know, potentially fraud, as they call it. And so there's an update about, you know, the system, so a name can't be double entered, and there's going to be new training. We talk about that all the time. There's going to be new training that people have to go through, and we're updating the policy and procedure, and everybody has to sign off on that they've seen this. And I'm like, wow, you know, this is serious. I go in, sign the new policy, like, wow. They didn't even have anybody terminated where there was suspicion that it might be deliberate fraud. I mean, if there is an incentive to double enter names for a class, you could get your bonus. This could have been done deliberately, yes, following logic. I don't think, or at least I didn't see where anybody, I didn't get an email, a notification that, you know, such and such is not working here anymore and all of that. There could have been deliberate fraud that was not handled with the punitive action that was taken against Gus T for what I did on a day off to address racism, white supremacy. I did think that that contrast was important. As I said, I felt like I was treated as though I had pilfered from the petty cash box or something. Like, my goodness. System of racism, white supremacy, tacky all the way. Another reason why I don't say namaste. I explained that at the yoga retreat several times. Anywho, *61, if you have recommendations for the name situation. We had the caller who feels he is not getting calls, interviews, because of having a black sounding name. So if anybody has any suggestions for that, this person did ask about changing their name. So if you think that's something to worth considering, like a legal name change or informal name change, if you think, you know, what if you have thoughts on that, feel free. If you have your own situation, feel free. I guess, Yeah, you have situations for Gus's. That's fine. I wasn't really, I was more sharing just because I've been talking about my yoga career the whole time. So I have to, you know, update as we roll along. But if you have any suggestions for Gus, that's fine too, even though that's not really what I was sharing for. First few folks who dialed in, *61, if you have comments, questions to share, suggestions, feel free. This, again, not for spectators. Oh, no. The switchboard is not doing its thing. Give me a few seconds, and we'll try it again with the switchboard. Getting the hands up. I did that yesterday. Let's see. All righty. We'll try it again. It is working now. Yum. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed.
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto, May 21 to May 24, Cows Counter Racist Yoga Retreat.
Yes. Greetings to you, callers and listeners. And, I'm a bit under the weather today, a little bit stuffy. So I am going to sound a slightly different. But yes, in terms of the person who had wrote in, if they feel comfortable in changing their name to one that's going to be more English sounding or white sounding, and if that's what's going to help get the more interviews. I mean, they should do what they can. It doesn't make it morally right. But again, it goes back to survival. I would prefer, it would be preferable if they use their name. But if it's not getting the feedback that they need, to get in front of the employers to get the position, then sometimes just adjusting for survival, you just have to do what you got to do. In terms of your yoga experience, Gus, I mean, it's really interesting how these white women do operate. And it's interesting how much white power they wield, that if they disagree with something and just a signature with a pen can fire somebody, you know. But to that, what I would recommend is say good riddance, because you're far more competent. And there will be even better opportunity for you. For my report on workplace racism, so 3 days ago, I had approached the supervisor informing her that I was suspecting a particular individual of committing fraud. This is one of the individuals that we support at the plantation, and not a staff member, but someone that uses the service. And I was told by my supervisor, who is also a white woman, that I should reserve judgment. Now, typically, according to protocol, if there is a suspicion of fraud, you have to notify your supervisor. And that's what I did as part of the protocol. But as usual, they have a way of turning it around to make it seem as if, you know, you're the problem. You're, meaning black people, are the problem. I was also, there was another situation where I received an email with a list of items to respond to, and I responded to those list of items in one email in kind, and I was labeled as being overwhelming. What I've also been noticing is that the stalking on the plantation has increased. The white women who are being terroristic, they are now encroaching on the area that I've moved to. And there's one that used to sit near where the supervisor that I report to was. Her cubicle is directly across from the supervisor whom I report to. And as of last week, she started moving over to the cubicle directly behind mine and has become very disruptive. I've also had a situation where there was a couple of white women. They would go down the aisle where it's just myself alone, and then they would come back out and go into the corridor where there's more workers and say within earshot, "Oh, she's so rude." So they're definitely setting up a lot of, they're just doing a lot of setting up. So they've definitely amplified on their terrorism. Also earlier this week, I was assigned a mentor, apparently, another white woman, by the supervisor. And she asked me to meet her at her seat. Now, where she's sitting, that's where the other white woman who has been terrorizing me also sit. And she made sure to launch her ambush within earshot for the audience there, to make it appear as if I did something incorrect in my work. Little did she know that I had already gone to the supervisor about the very thing that she was talking about, and that I again was working within protocol. And so what I did was, the next day I had told her in private that I did not feel comfortable as to the venue she had chosen to speak to me at, considering that she is aware that I'm undergoing the situation with those set of people that are terrorizing me. I didn't use it in that wording, but I did mention that, you know, she is aware of the situation. And, you know, I first asked her, is there a reason as to why you brought me over there, where they were located, to say these things? And she said, oh, she was just relaying a message to me, acting all innocent, but she wasn't. She knew exactly what she was doing, setting me up for an ambush. So I told her that in the future, if she can tell me in a more private venue as to what the concerns are, because I felt very uncomfortable with that. And when you're using the ICL statement, they can't turn around and go against it, because they don't have right to invalidate ICL statements. So that's what I used in part. As well as, you know, logically speaking, I sometimes preface my words with logically speaking as well. There was also a seminar on mental health. And the same terrorist white women used it as a means to launch an attack, saying, oh, what if there was, what are the checklists or a personality disorder? And then after the session was over, they proceeded to state my name in the cubicles farther down, saying, oh, perhaps she has a personality disorder. I mean, at this point, nothing that you do like everything that you'll do, like there is nothing that you can do to stop this terrorism. The only ones that can stop the terrorism are the perpetrators doing it. Regardless, I mean, I could, Gus, as you've mentioned, like they set up a whole lie around a white guy yelling at you for breathing loudly. You know, I'm sure that there's many other callers and listeners as well that have been lied upon consistently about things that never occurred. At work, they set me up and they lie. If I'm working and I'm not able to get to their desk in 2 minutes, they accuse me of being unapproachable and dismissive. I mean, like anything that you do, they will spin it to the negative. And it's just not a place that I would want to be around. The dis-ease that they create is just really disturbing, and I just keep plugging away on the exit strategy. Thank you for listening. I leave the line.
Context of white supremacy. Overwhelming. See there? Said, you're just overwhelming. What does that even mean? That's always a great one. If there's some sort of critique like that, you're intimidating, you're overwhelming, you're unapproachable, you're aloof. What exactly do you mean when you say that? What exactly can I do so that I am not overwhelming, aloof?
Well, Gus, can I? Oh, sorry.
Hmm. But yeah.
Could I add one more thing? In fact, I did ask that question because I did mention to the supervisor. I said, if I had sent 5 different emails to answer the one email that had a whole list of things to respond to, wouldn't that have been overwhelming as well? I was told yes. And I said, well, what would I do in that situation? Oh, well, you know, just, you know, see if you can break it down some more. It's a catch-22. It's like no matter what you do, at the end of the day, what I've realized is they don't want, and I mean white people, they do not want to find a resolution. They already have it in their mind what they want, which is to terrorize and to get you out anytime that they can. They don't want a resolution. I'm sorry, I leave the line.
This problem could be solved immediately. Individuals classified as white like things the way they are. That is my conclusion. I could be in error. I just wanted to say also, I think you had mentioned sometimes the white women kind of coming close to your seating area and saying these, making these comments. Maybe, you know, she has some sort of mental disorder and maybe she's crazy and all these sort of things. You know, she's difficult to work with. I think some of that is a setup, because you were just saying, like, them saying you sending these emails, trying to get clarification on things is overwhelming. Then if you go to report, oh man, these folks are, you know, coming over and standing close to my work area and, you know, saying that I have a mental disorder and saying this and saying that. And then it's, oh my gosh, you're coming every other day and just talking about being picked on like you're a child and that sort of thing. Like, you just can't get along with people. You're just coming in every other day and just accusing Becky of this and accusing Tim of that. And that sort of, I feel like some of the times, especially if this is all in cahoots, some unjust networking where they can do that. Where I think for sometimes the best strategy is planned ignoring on that. Like, you, that can be entered in a workplace journal, but I'm not sure if I would go and report that immediately. that might be something to catalog and wait and see what happens. And that might even also be one of those that if it gets ignored, maybe they stop, maybe they don't. But I would still document, put it in my diary. I don't know if I would go and report, especially if I'm going to report to someone who I think, you know, this might just be more evidence of me being, you know, overwhelming, intimidating. I think that's a great strategy with the, you said getting this mentor and the person scheduling this meeting in the area where you didn't feel comfortable and using that language where I don't feel comfortable. I too think sometimes that can work to our advantage in the workplace. I think I've talked about the word safe before, where things are being done to jeopardize my safety or you know, just I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel welcome in the workspace as a result. I think that type of language can work successfully to get certain things changed, or if it's a way someone is talking to you, way work is being done in the area. That can be one constructive way of addressing it. And requesting a change of venue, because I think that can also be the case sometimes where they'll have meetings or have us assigned to be in locations that are not going to be constructive to us, where sometimes that can be a great request, a change of venue, something we just, you know, wouldn't think of asking for. Let's see. I'll get the other folks who dialed in. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments, questions to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. I am sorry for your job situation. For that to happen is a tremendous inconvenience. I think from a logical standpoint of what I've studied about you, that you would recover and move on to the next phase. And to the caller in Canada, hang in there. Hang in there. And I know you will make good decisions. If I can, I would like to have permission to read an article. It's not very long. It definitely is workplace racism. And the subject is the National Football League. Do I have your permission, sir?
I reckon. Let's hear it.
It's written by what appears to be a white female by the name of Nancy Amour. Opinion. What NFL 100 is it commemorating? League's 12-year ban on black players. As some of you know, the NFL is celebrating its quote-unquote 100th season. This article, I think she wrote in Miami. Despite all of the money and effort the NFL has put into promoting its 100th season, there's a part of league's history that has been conspicuously ignored. Then again, given the league's ongoing struggles with diversity, I'm gonna put counter-racist language into this, struggles with racism, this shouldn't be a surprise. For 12 years, from 1934 to 1946, there were no black players in the NFL. That's right. For more than a decade, some of the most famous owners in the league's history, George Papa Bear Hollis, Art Rooney, and Wellington Mara, among them, had an unspoken agreement to ban black players. I didn't know that, Kansas City Chiefs linebacker Reggie Ragland said this week. That's crazy to believe, and yet it's really not. The ignorance that continues to keep black people from getting jobs as coordinators, head coaches, and general managers can be directly traced to the racism and white supremacy that locked non-white black people out of the league for those 12 years. I do think that as an influence on black hires, San Francisco 49ers cornerback Richard Sherman said, it's just an old school mindset that needs to be overcome. The NFL is hardly the only league with a racist past, but baseball at least has had the courage to confront its failings. Jackie Robinson's number 42 was retired by Major League Baseball in 1997, and he's honored each year on April the 15th, the day he broke baseball's color barrier. Negro leaguers, many of whom never had a chance to play in the majors, are eligible for the Hall of Fame. The NFL, meanwhile, has a page on a website chronicling the reintegration of the league. It's not on the NFL's main website, mind you, but rather its operations website. There are no black players from that era enshrined in the Hall of Fame, nor is there anything to signify that the white players of that time didn't necessarily face the best competition. It's part of our history. We don't walk away from it, Commissioner Roger Goodell said Wednesday. But it doesn't embrace it either. This, after all, is a league with a team that still refused to give up its racist slur nickname, coined by original owner and avowed segregationist racist George Preston Marshall. Marshall, who bought into a Boston franchise in 1932, renamed it a year later and moved it to Washington in 1937, was a driving force in the ban, along with the fledgling league's concentration in larger cities. This would have been the perfect year for the NFL to call attention to the ban as a means not just of educating people, but acknowledging the wrong that was done and the legacy that it has left. It could have been a commercial honoring the players who were locked out of the league during those 12 years, players like Kenny Washington and Woody Strode. It could have had throwback uniforms from the Pacific Coast League, where many black players played during the ban, or the All-America Football Conference, which ultimately forced the NFL's reintegration. Better yet, it could have had some special recognition during Super Bowl week in Miami, given that Cleveland Browns owner and founder, Paul Brown, refused to bring Bill Willis and Marion Motley to a game in the segregated city in 1946 after the two received death threats. I didn't know until later that we had been threatened, Willis, who died in 2007, told USA Today Sports in 2006. It was, if you bring these excellent, these niggas down here, something bad is going to happen. Instead, the only recognition came inadvertently and probably went unnoticed outside of Chicago. In June, when the Chicago Bears unveiled the 1936 throwbacks they wore this season, Tariq Cohen and Kyle Fuller modeled them. They were the first black players ever to wear that uniform. You cannot have a 100-year anniversary and omit that kind of history if you treasure the truth, Reverend Jesse Jackson told USA Today Sports. You don't have a right to deny 12 years of being locked out. They don't have the right to deny what it cost us, added Jackson, who said he has been stonewalled by the league when he's asked about raising awareness of the ban. He could have bought a team. We could have bought a team at $500,000 when the water was low. We couldn't be coaches. We couldn't be general managers. The whole infrastructure. We were locked out of all of that. The vestiges of that injustice remain. Of the 31 team owners, the Packers are owned by the Green Bay community. All but one is white. When the Browns hired Andrew Berry this week, he doubled the number of black general managers to two. There are only four black head coaches, and despite the many openings, only one black has been hired in each of the past 3 years. Chief offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy has played a huge role in the development of Patrick Mahomes, and his two predecessors were quickly scooped up for the head coaching gigs. Yet he has been passed over for, among others, a special teams coach, a recently fired college coach, and two recycled NFL coaches, of course, all white. On the field, blacks now play every position. But before Lamar Jackson was drafted, longtime league executive Paul Polian suggested he switch to wide receiver. The Baltimore Ravens quarterback is all but assured of winning MVP on a Saturday night in only his second season. There's always been something about the NFL. Did I hear something?
30 seconds. You can finish it up in about 30 seconds.
Okay. I'm going too long. Okay. With segregation, it was black players in general. From then on, it's always been about black leadership. they've historically felt uncomfortable giving black people places to lead. Basically, I mean, I guess by now you get the realm of the story itself and how these past issues actually are prevalent on what's going on today as far as employment under the people activity of entertainment and how it connects. Because a lot of these owners presently, the original owners, it's their children. Like Rooney, the Rooney Rule that I heard you mention about an hour ago, comes from one of the children of the Rooney that refused to hire black people for 12 years. And that's my report. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. This is what they want. White ball games owned, controlled by white men and white men, white women. And since I mentioned all that nonsense about patriarchy and sexism from before, sometimes they pass it to their white male children. Sometimes they pass it to their white female children. They're doing all that hubbub and people pretending that they love Kobe Bryant. The Lakers, family-owned, Dr. Jerry Buss, white man, passed it to his daughter, white woman, Jeannie Buss, in control of the Lakers. Sometimes it goes to a white man, sometimes it goes to a white woman. Even within all that, all of the money that so many black people have made in professional sports, if white people were really serious, like, yeah, that's messed up, we didn't let the niggers join in the league for those 12 years. Yeah, we didn't hire them. Man, we can't even get general managers now. You know what? We have allowed a few of these niggers to get some money. I tell you what, we'll grab, let's see, if a few of them that have behaved and they haven't done too much crack and they didn't rape a white woman, okay, we'll grab you. We say we like Walter Payton. I'll take him. Let's grab a few. Jerry Rice, we'll take him. He's been pretty well behaved. Okay. And grab one more. Let's see. We'll get Randy Moss, Warren Moon. Just pick somebody. All right. You three. You four. You grab 5, 10. Count. Go all the way up. Boom, 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 boom. We'll grab a few that have behaved. We'll allow you to get some money. You all put your money together in a trust. Whammo. We'll give you, you know, this team. They could have an expansion draft. They talk about expansion all the time. Whammo. They could have done that. And black-owned Carolina Panthers right there. Next to Michael Jordan's house, they could have done that a long time ago. Like, they could have came up with all sorts of little wacky ideas if they were really serious about solving this. They don't want to do that. Like, this is what they want.
Yeah.
Like, white-owned teams for white ball games. Maybe we'll allow some of the niggas to come play. Maybe we won't.
Speaking of Mr. Rice today, NFL Hall of Famer, probably one of the greatest football players that ever lived. Guess where they had him on the news today? At Miami International Airport, greeting white people as a baggage handler. I'm not joking. I'm not joking. He's in one of the major airports in the world with a vest on, you know, the vest you can see the person at night, so you won't hit him and kill him. He looked like a dressed like a baggage handler, greeting people at the airport as they're coming off the airplane.
That is the system of racism. That's how they're comfortable seeing us.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, workplace racism. If you have suggestions on what's been shared, or if you have your own situation. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Draftomania.
Greetings, guys. Greetings, callers and listeners. I just wanted to say I regret hearing the tackiness of what happened to you. I think that was very, very tacky, but it's to be expected. And I just also wanted to say that I kind of had, it was some red flags when you were saying that they suggested that woman gave you that book and that for that author to come on your show. I just, you know, my gut was just saying it was just something was really fishy about that, you know, that, you know, she might have just been sent there to surveil you so they can go back and basically really find out what you were doing. And, you know, right after that, after you had her on, that's when they ended up firing you. So I just didn't feel comfortable about, you know, just them, that woman, your boss, introducing that lady, because it just didn't sound right to me. I just felt that that was something a little strange, and that there might have been some unjust networking going on with that situation. Also, I hope that maybe in the future, maybe you can get your own studio or something that you can probably practice on your own. You know, maybe you can.
Not hearing you, Draptomania. Not hearing you. Your volume dropped out. Not hearing you at all. Not hearing you at all. Let's see. Uh-oh. Looks like she might have dropped off the line completely. Yikes. Well, if you dropped off completely, if you just dial us back, let's see. Can we get her back?
Hey, guess. I'm sorry. You know what it is. You know when you get your 2-hour time limit on the phones, and they automatically drop you off. So I was able to call right then, and you were able to get me. So I appreciate that. But as I was saying, hopefully maybe in the future you'll be able to, you know, I'm not sure if this should be something that you would want, maybe getting your own studio so you can practice on your own. That would be a great thing, so you wouldn't have to deal with those types of, you know, issues. Not saying that you won't have to still deal with issues, but, you know, at least you'll have your own spot and you won't have to, you know, have all that interference and things like that. But, I do. I'm sorry that you're having to go through that. And also for the caller in Canada, I've been doing a lot of research on there's something called reactive abuse. And the things that these people are doing with this stalking, and they're like instigating and antagonizing and trying to provoke you. And what it is that they'll constantly do things to try to provoke you, to get you upset, to have you. It's like, you know, when you have a cat or an animal and you keep, getting it, backing it up into a corner, eventually the cat will or that animal will lash out. But the main thing, and this is something that I'm learning, and still learning, that one of the main things is, and that we constantly talk about on this show, is that just, you know, you have to learn how to not react. And when you start doing your research and start studying, like on a psychological level, about how these tactics or these things that these people are doing to you, it gives you a leverage, because, you know, when you didn't know, these behaviors and these different tactics, it was, you don't have a way of basically kind of keeping yourself in check. And then and when you learn about these things, you can kind of gauge your own, look back and take your own inventory and see how, in the past, how you might have made mistakes and how you, you know, ended up falling for a lot of these tactics, these things that these people are doing to you on purpose. And that, like I said, I think the main thing is just to make sure, you know, it's very hard, but just to try to, like, not, like you said, planned ignoring. You know, they're doing the same things around us, because one of the tactics is the first thing these psychopaths do is, you know, they want to label you as crazy. So, like, okay, like you were saying, like if she goes back and says anything to her boss about what they're doing to her, then they're going to, you know, it's just, all they're going to do is just gaslight her and make it seem like it's her. Like she's been saying, all she's been going through is a whole bunch of gaslighting. They've been constantly torturing her and terrorizing her, stalking her, and they're doing it on a daily basis. And it's basically trying to wear her down to a point where she's going to react. And when she reacts in a manner that is not you know, flattering for her, then they'll point and say, see, I told you, she's crazy. So one of the main things is to remember is to try not to react in a bad way. I had to learn these things the hard way. And like I said, I'm still learning. I am not finished learning. I'm going through stuff all the time. And that would just be my suggestion. And last week, talking about the phone, we were talking about the phone, the cell phone. And we had a meeting this week, and we had a meeting where we're cutting down. And it just seems like I don't believe in coincidences, but now we're cutting down on the texting. They found a resolution for us not to, you know, have to text so much or be on the phone so much. But one of the downsides is we can't, we can no longer listen to headphones and like our radio, or like I would usually be listening to like YouTube, you know, research, you know, doing a lot of research and listening to lectures and things like that on many topics on YouTube. So I won't be able to do that anymore. But or like if you have one of your shows when I'm at work, I wouldn't be able to listen during that time. So that's one of the downsides to that situation. And also, I had my boss ended up calling me out on the group text, and called me out in regards to having headphones on. And I was just humbled because, you know, I was wrong, you know, and, you know, I didn't really know that I wasn't supposed to have it around in that day. You know, I just thought that maybe they just didn't want us on the phone, you know. So what he ended up doing was the next day he did apologize via text. So, you know, I you know, took the apology and things like that and just said, well, you know, we all make mistakes, and say he wouldn't do it again. So I thought that was, you know, commendable for him to at least do that much. But yeah, that's basically all I had to share. And that's, you know, I hope everything works out where it doesn't put you in a bind to a point where you're not able to survive, you know, because when things happen like that abruptly, because I've been through those situations where I've been unemployed and I lost my job, and, you know, so I can totally, I have a lot of empathy for you. So that's all I have. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Much obliged. Thank you for the concern and suggestions. Getting control in terms of, you know, how we respond. I put that in the description every week. Even my situation, like I didn't go in stomping and cursing. I was just asking, same thing that we talk about here, just asking questions, trying to get information, like getting control of your emotions. And, you know, sometimes even if that takes time, if you have to stop and pause to kind of figure it out, that's why I said I wouldn't, you know, respond. I would do some planned ignoring, because sometimes if you can strategize, it might take a day, it might take 2 days, it might take a week to think about, you know, what's the best way to move forward and how you want to try to deal with things, how you want to try to resolve things. So getting control of your emotions, responses in the workplace is critical. The calling out, now, I know you've talked many times that you work with a lot of non-white people frequently, Draftomania, and the person that did the calling out about the phone, I just don't remember if you said it was a white person or a non-white person. I know you work with a lot of non-white people.
Non-white.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm, non-white. Mm-hmm. So
that I have seen frequently in work environments from both white people and non-white people, where they like to like verbally berate someone. And a lot of times it'll be situations like what you said, about something where you're not even sure if it's a policy, because it seems like that this isn't really a rule, or, you know, whatever the situation is. And then you come to find out later that it's not, and they come back to apologize. I just found that sometimes that's some people's form of bullying, that they'll do these type
of... Yeah, he's a bully like that.
Yeah, where they get to humiliate you publicly or berate you publicly. And then they'll come back, man, I'm so sorry about that, Draftomania. I was really out of line, and I should have come to talk to you privately. And I don't even know if I was fussing about the correct violation. And I mean, that's all good, I guess, and everything. But I mean, some people make that a habit, where once a month, once mm-hmm. every other month, it'd be some sort of excuse. I'm having a bad day or what. They like mm-hmm. that. They like to be able to humiliate white people and some victims, unfortunately. That's just love it. I feel a little bit better. I get to come in and stomp on somebody and yell at them a little bit. And then let's go to Starbucks. I'm sorry. My treat. Let's get you whatever you want. I mean, justice. I would much rather justice as opposed to that sort of tacky treatment. But even keeping the emotions in check.
He said that, I'm sorry, he said that it's a pattern of doing that. And he's the type of individual that it is a bullying type of individual where he gets off on, gets some satisfaction out of making you feel bad. And, you know, this is not the first time where he's done things where, you know, he's done things and it's like, you know, it's basically almost like the caller from Canada goes through, like, where you're just trying to provoke. You know, it's a lot of that, trying to do things to get a reaction. So, yeah, he does it all the time. So, yeah, I totally agree with what you just said, and I do apologize for interrupting.
Context of white supremacy. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if we have missed you totally, if you have commentary to share, line should be open.
Hi, Gus. It's B from Toronto. The call just dropped, so I called back in. I'll reserve on and let others go through first. Thank you so much.
Much obliged, be in Toronto. Feel better. Drink some warm water. Get your fluids in. Water, maybe some tea. One that works pretty well if you're congested. If you boil for 20 minutes, boil a clove of garlic 20 minutes, and then add lemon juice, cayenne pepper. And I'm vegan. The recipe calls for honey. I mean, you could do agave nectar, or you could skip all that if you don't need the sweetener. But one clove of garlic, 20 minutes, cayenne pepper, lemon juice, you know, honey is optional. Save the bees, but honey is optional. That is really nice for kind of clearing up the sinuses a little bit. And fluids, so drink those fluids. You sound so congested. Let's see. I needed to read people that wrote in. Non-white male. Though I'm retired, I will target jobs to make some extra money, knowing that I have no intention of working at these places on a long-term basis. During the month of December 2019, I was hired to work at Annandale Village. The first week, I was in orientation. This place makes its money housing basically people that have financial means at their residential services. After the first week of orientation, I observed that only black female had the means to live there. That only one black female had the means to live there. After talking with employees, I found it was common for racial slurs to be uttered by the white clients there. Due to the money factor, there were no consequences for employees experiencing this verbal abuse from these clients with mental health issues, or not, I suspect. To save money, the agency wanted to train me in giving medications, which would cost more money to have a nurse to do it. I completed the training and informed my supervisor that I was not comfortable giving these medications. The position I was hired for was to provide security. The agency had trained me in giving medications as a proxy and maintenance duties. My supervisor informed me that he would have to check with human resources to see if I could decline the duty of giving medications. According to the human resources, I'd signed off on agreeing to give medications. I turned my identification into my supervisor and resigned. To me, this was a win-win situation. The job paid me over $1,000 for being in training for 1 week and doing the on-the-job training the second week. On top of that, the CEO provided a Christmas celebration at work and gave all employees money. Wow. Well, I can only say black self-respect. I think that is so critical. Having standards about how you're going to be treated, how you're going to be used, And even, you know, what you're going to be told to do, like what duties you're going to take on, and particularly for this, because, I mean, that is crucial. Like with those medications, if they don't want to take them, they're calling you nigger. They take too much. They don't take enough. If something happens, am I going to be blamed? Like, oh, my God, like I'm not even trained for this. Like I signed up for security or whatever it is. I signed up to do bingo 4 days a week. And what now? To like, wait a minute. Get a nurse. Get somebody who is qualified for this. Like, and they try to do what they call it, cutting corners. Negligence is really what it ought to be called, but they'll do this sort of thing on a regular basis. I've seen myself. There was a non-white person with a so-called Latino. He did speak Spanish and English. Non-white male, though. But they would get him if they needed an interpreter. Interpreters are expensive. I don't know if you all know that, but man, you have to get somebody to come for an hour and sit, and whew, that is not minimum wage effort. But this here fella, oh, they would just grab, oh yeah, I'll come over here and sit for that. And he was like, man, if you all had to call and pay something like that, would be, they do this sort of thing all the time to non-white people, have you doing things that, you know, someone competent would be paid a lot. We don't want to, we'll find some nigger to come do it. We don't even have to pay him, in fact. We'll just, you know, threaten them, give them a bucket of chitlins, and that'll be that spectacular to be able to say, no, I'm not going to do it. You're not going to threaten me and bully me. Be careful. But that's why I say those policies and procedures, man, when you go through that orientation and you have to sign anything, read everything. If it's fine print, get a magnifying glass. That's why I said sometimes you need more time. Oh, wait a minute. I got to go, you know, to the library because I need to get a magnifying glass. So I'm going to have to blow this one up, put this on the screen so I can look at it and make sure that I'm reading everything. Because I don't, wait a minute. You got me signed up here. Wait, it says I'm supposed to give. It's, what is this about injections? Wait a minute. I just signed up to wash the dishes. What do you mean? Wait a minute. I mean, and they do this sort of thing all the time. This is routine. I mean, I'm sure other folks can share experiences of that nature. But this happens, you know, when you don't get to read everything closely, you don't get to pay attention closely, and they will, oh, yeah, you already signed that over. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yep. 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 And we can call you nigger 5 days out of the week, and you can't do anything about that either. You got to read the fine print. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, suggestions, observations to share, feel free.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. Gus, about the situation that the racism that was practiced against you, is it like, say, or well, did you have a thought about doing like a yoga class with black people, or you said I think with non-white people, or would that be as difficult as a course with mainly white people? I don't know the demographics. Or,
I mean, I enjoy the retreats. That's, you know, all black people. I've enjoyed those. I really enjoyed teaching in the park last summer. It's different, but the retreat is more work. That is, you know, teaching in the park is, you don't have to do anything but show up and teach. Like, that's, you know, just carefree and good times. The retreats are a lot of work, but it is fun. I enjoy those, and I obviously would do more of those as long as it's constructive and people want to hang out. If it was opportunity. I'm Dr. Lathan, I emailed her. She's coming to Oregon in a few months, and she said, come down to Oregon, and I could be hired to teach yoga classes. So I think she's supposed to have black people. That was the whole reason that I was going. So that sort of thing, I'd be super excited about. Like I did say, I would have a pause if it's, you know, going to be a lot of white identified victims who, you know, are married to white people and got their white homies and friends waiting outside to pick them up from the event. I would give a little pause if it's going to be that type of thing. But generally speaking, my experiences teaching with mostly black people or all black people or at least all non-white people have been extremely constructive. And yeah, I would be definitely open to doing more of that.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that answer. Yeah, because when I never even thought about that, like how just how the racism can become so so dominant when they're just focusing on the breathing. Like, wow, races are just very just meticulous on just making anything that they focus upon a black person, a non-white person, to practice racism. I had a couple of incidents from the last couple of weeks. The first is I was, I noticed that this program that we use in the department to print out records, apparently mine's, or the way that it was functioning, it was causing an issue whenever I would make a receipt. Like if people needed to make a credit card or debit card payment over the phone, it would make some kind of an issue if I helped the customer and it would come up with my username instead of my actual name, and it would say $0 and 0 cents on it. So the supervisor noticed that on the list of my receipts. And I said, yeah, I thought that was kind of odd too. So I ended up talking to like a specialist or a technician over the phone. And he ended up finding something out through the computer, because like you say, it's not my computer. I don't own or possess it. So there was a way that the person over the phone was able to control what was going on the screen. And he noticed that my account was listed under external. All right. So it had my name listed with what he used the term outside vendors and escrow accounts and stuff like that, what people use to pay for things, copy requests, law firms and such. So I said, well, and I noticed that my name was the only internal employee on that list. So I said, are there any other internal employees that are on the external list? And he said, no. He said, no. So I said, man, I don't know what to think about this. So, you know, he kind of like paused, right? Like, oh, something's going on here. This person at this job has been mistreated. So this person doesn't work here. He's just some kind of technician or whatever. So I had been in the department for 4 years, since 2016. And I guess since last year, 2019, this issue started happening. So I wasn't even in the internal employee list like the other employees. So apparently I had to get a new username and a password. So this brings me to my second one, where I was trying to configure the settings in the program. And, you know, I'm just scrolling through and seeing what I can learn about the different settings. And I noticed in the marriage license section of it, it has something called race codes, R-A-C-E, C-O-D-E-S, codes. And it had like the list of the classifications once again. And it was like they were just, I don't know if you could go in there and set it. Like you can go in and type the different classifications, and it had, as we said before, white, black, black, white, Mexican, Hispanic, unlisted, private. It had all kind of words in there, black, Caucasian, so endless confusion. So I don't know if that's something where somebody can go in and edit that, or like the answer I got before, oh, it depends on what the state of Florida says or whatever. So that was a interesting one that I had. And the third one is there is a lady that retired today. And a couple of weeks ago, these emails started going out where some of the CLIC members, or one of the people that sent the email was a CLIC member, and the email was asking for a generous donation of $25 apiece from every person in the department. So I'm like, I can't do this. And the black female assistant supervisor was like, oh, well, you can just try and just give whatever you can. I said, nah, this not even right. Like, everybody don't get treated like this. Oh, well, you know, it's just for the department. I said, no, this individual right here, I do not get treated like that. No one else get that same kind of consideration. To ask for $25 apiece, and there's 14 people in the department, like, do the math on that. Like, that's never requested any other time. So it just doesn't seem logical. So I didn't give any money. And apparently this person that was going into retirement didn't even want any kind of a potluck. You know, the person has a farm. You know, she is pretty well to do, as most people would say. So this doesn't seem right for people to be given $25 for them to get some kind of a gift that they're not even telling us about. So the person is white, obviously. And they consistently are persistent with sending out these emails to try to pressure people into giving money. So they end up giving the person a big-time retirement party, even putting it in the email, reminding people to come get food and everything. So I just wanted to share that because the person didn't even want the party, okay? But you got to remember, she's white, so she's already highly valued. My fourth one is the black couple came in again, and the guy that said I was intimidating, right? So they came in with the suit and the bride gown or whatever. He said, hey, big man over there, you know, and then he came over to give me a fist bump. So I noticed something, right? He invited people to the ceremony, and it was a lot of white people came. I was like, oh, okay. And then I thought about that mindset, you know. You said one black male is going up to another tall black male, and he's taller than me, all right, maybe by an inch or two, and says that I am intimidating. Okay, so, but the females that were around, he never, you know, said anything to insult them. All right, so I wanted to keep that one in mind. My fifth one is there was that racist sergeant I've been speaking about. He said something that I had to end up reporting, and I thought that was a threat. So once again, the elevator, once again, it was me and another white person. Apparently, I guess we had on the same color shirt or whatever, and I guess it's this kind of joke punchline where some people say, oh, well, I guess I didn't get the blue memo, right? We both had on a blue shirt, and I guess he had on a certain other kind of blue. So we just go and get on the elevator, right? And the dude says, oh, well, you know, I'm riding up with a shank. So I said, I'm like, what? Like, and I looked down at his palm, and he's moving around some kind of instrument in his hand. Now, this is the sergeant of the security in the courthouse. And I say, man, like, what are you doing that? Why do you have that? And then he says, because I saw you coming. See, because he, you know, he likes saying that kind of, you know, abrasive racist type, you know, comment. So I said, well, we work in the civil justice center. This ain't an example of justice. And he says, well, yeah, this is street justice. And I say, but we ain't on the street. We're in the courthouse. So the door open. So I go to the desk, and I'm typing out this email to myself of what just happened. And I have an authentication that I need to get signed from the judge and the clerk. So the white female that put it on the desk, she's like, oh, yeah, you know, we need to try and see if we can get the signature. So I say, you know what, this is a perfect time because I need to talk. I need to talk to the clerk, the top boss. And she gets super scared, like, oh, no, what happened? You know, I say, oh, no, I just need to talk to him. So it's not anything I did, right? It's nothing that has to do with me. So like guilt complex much. So I was like, I just need to talk to him, you know. So I ended up going to talk to him and I said what the person said, and I said, This looks to be like a threat to me. Like, you know, what can be done? And he says, oh, you know, it seems like he was trying to be funny, but it didn't sound all that funny to me, because you know, when it comes to when black people make reports, it's got to result in being about a joke, you know what I'm saying? So he says, well, you know, I'll go in and talk to security. So he came out and went into where the code name, the female, the warden, he went into where she was at, and so he was talking with her and the legal counsel. So I'm quite sure that had something to do with what was said to me, because the language I was using, you know, it was like, I don't know if I heard this before. Like, why is he talking like that? Like, this got me kind of worried. So let me go ahead and jump on this. So when I seen the dude, he don't even speak to me. You know, he kind of just turned his head. And I noticed they got more black officers up the front with the security. They got their black bailiffs. So I'm thinking, could that have been in response to what I said? All right. And my last one is, this white woman, the other white woman that sent that email I spoke about, all of a sudden she was packing her belongings today, because she's been going at war pretty much with the other white people. And I know it's kind of like a metaphor, but she's been intensely in conflict with the other white people. So they're, you know, pretty much eventually kind of got to her, and she was packing her boxes. So the black person was like, oh, yeah, you know, she quit today. And I said, who? And then she named the person. And then I went to go see what was up. And then she was like, yeah, like I told you, I've been meaning to have a heart to heart with you. So I'm like, dang. So I'm like, oh, well, you know, and she was packing up her things. And I went to ask the supervisor, I'm like, what's going on here? And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, well, she resigned or whatever. So. Basically a lot of drama with the switchboard and how calls are being transferred, and they tending to blame this one person, but I think they're going to go after the black person next, because they tend to do that with the two sides. They devalue the people on my side, and for the most part that's going to be the black person. So I'm going to continue to observe the social dynamics and the racism. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Wow. Context of white supremacy. I'm so glad I am muted. When you got to the part where you went up to make your report, you know, they're fitting to shank me in the halls of justice, and the white person who encountered you, I need to speak to Secretary. Oh, it's not about me, is it? I was cracking up laughing, like, man, this person, I don't know if it's male or female, but this person, I hope he didn't find out what we did to his water. Wow. That is the system that we're in. Like, it's so much unjustness going on. Like, oh, Lord. Woo. Did he find? Oh, whew. Yes, I will get him right in. Woo, have to be more careful. We'll send out a text. Got a little bit of more unjust networking to do. The shank in the halls of justice, man, and the five, talk about sequencing. Now, before that, it was big man, fist bump. All of that is so tight. I don't even like that with non-white people, because you said this is a victim, unfortunately. I don't like any of that. When white people come and do it and call you some tacky names, homie, what's up, pimpin', and blah, 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 and all that, none of it. And I appreciate the observations as well about this victim, and I guess he had a lot of white friends, in quotes. But yeah, you might have to, I think other people have noted that observation. Victims who spend a lot of time around white people, have a lot of white friends, or are married to white people, might have to engage in a lot of kind of self-degrading behavior, anti-black conduct, and that might be some of it. But all of that, you know, big man and intimidating and all that, and we're just here to work. Like, I would even feel some type of way about the fist bump on that. Like, I was intimidating last week, and just go hang out with the, that's what I'd be thinking about. Like, just go hang out with the white people. Just go with the white. I'm going to try to be professional, VGQ. Woo, man, just be professional and get through it. And then you go from that big man to, I got a shank waiting for big intimidating man. That's what I mean about, that's not just mindless chatter where people are talking about you as a black person as being big and intimidating, because that's what they said about me at the yoga studio. It's intimidating, big black male. That you know, generally what that means is justified violence. We need to have a shank, we need to have a rifle, you know, we need to have an elephant gun, tranquilizers, you know, because we got this big intimidating black male. We told you last week, looks like he can bench press about 6,000 pounds. I got something to take him down. He might try to rape one of us. What in the halls of jail? I mean, I can't even imagine to literally have someone fumbling around in their pocket. I've got a shank for you. You watch it. Like, what? Like, a shank? Like, I'd even a knife. I got something on my keychain, or I got my, I got a shank for, I know how to deal with convict niggas like you. I got my, like, what? At the court? What is the person's title officially you gave it before? What was this person's title?
They call him Sergeant. He is the Sergeant. He is a sergeant, and I was looking down at his hand, and it looks like the bottom part of, like, what you use for a screwdriver, but it was just the bottom handle part. But he said that he used the term shank. It's like, what is it, like a prison term, ain't it, or something? So just using language like that. And then street justice, you know, you on the block, you on the corner, right? Like, you sell drugs and stuff, so it's mine. Hey, Form Voltron, because it was another white person on the elevator, and he was like, oh, no, I don't know if I agree with this one, man. Because he saw that same guy, he saw me that day, he could barely even look at me. The other guy that was on that, I heard him say it, because the guy would be nervously laughing, you know, with a red face.
We have talked a lot about how black people are criminalized. That, I mean, that's trivial in comparison to everything else. The direct violence. Can you imagine a white person in the courthouse? I mean, maybe McDonald's. I could see. Okay, they shank people at McDonald's. I got you. But the courthouse, this is where you go. You get your passport photo, get your death certificate, get your wedding certificate, wedding license, and all the rest of it. You get charges. This is where they take your child away, and the sergeant is threatening to shank an employee at the courthouse and meet out street. Like, wait a minute, street justice? Am I a criminal? Like, what's going on? Have I wronged you? Do we have a turf dispute? Like, oh my God. I am stunned. I can think of few times where I have just been left speechless with workplace race. That is definitely one to report. Take your safety. That, and what I thought, that is in Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear. That's the exact type of thing Gavin DeBecker said. Oh, no, you report that immediately. And that might even be a call to the police and a criminal report. That is not a joke. That,
He's reaching. Oh my God. Are you serious? Like, I am being threatened. Like, he's going to stab. He's going to shank me in the courthouse. Like, how is it? He should not be employed another day. Can you imagine on any day, anybody on this call, especially our caller here in Florida at the court, can you imagine talking to another white employee like that? Even in your jokiest day, the best day ever, we're having a blast, whatever, you're going to reach in your pocket for a blunt object. Oh, yeah, I got my shank ready. Can you imagine? Street justice, and then follow it up with, can you on any day? Is this person armed? You said he's a sergeant. Does he have a firearm?
Not that I could see, because he wasn't in uniform. He was just in plain clothes, like a khaki pants and like a button down shirt. So I guess they usually wear that kind of stuff when they're injured. So you're walking with a limp or whatever, but still racist and dangerous.
Report, Gavin DeBecker. We read that in the book club. That is exactly what he said. That is nothing to take lightly. That should be an immediate report, and that might even be a police report on top of it. This person in the courthouse, how is someone allowed to talk that way and behave that way in the court? In my view, he should be banned from the courthouse. You're threatening violence against someone who's employed here, a staff, employee staff at the courthouse. I mean, system of racism, white supremacy. No incident of any sort of threat like that in a work environment. That should be, in my view, that should be a police report as well. But definitely reported, written up immediately. Take it seriously that this person is taking a threat against your life. I'm speechless. Let's see. Thankfully, I took notes. The $25, man. We have talked about that so many times on the program. We had, Kim Jefferson. My memory might be off on the name, on the female's name, but she was on the program, black female. She was with us in 2014 in the summer, and she had this exact same type of thing. It was a white female employee was leaving. She hadn't even been working there that long. She'd been there for like a few months, and it was they were going to get her like a gym membership or something. And it was, pitch in $20. What? I don't even know her. We don't even get down like that. And it was, well, you got $20. Come on, you pitch in $20. I'm like, I don't want to do it. Come on, you got $20. And it's just aggressive. Like, you get like, whoa. I'm good. Thank you. That's another one that takes black self-respect. We talk about that with the name. Man, they can bully and send 20 emails and give you all kinds of nasty looks and things. No. And that might even be one. I don't want any more emails. I'm not going to change my mind. I heard Mr. Fuller, where you can play the fiddle on that one. Man, I am as broke. I am on extra hard times. Matter of fact, do you have $5 or a can of beans that you could loan me? Because I'm hurting. I don't have anything. Like, make sure you don't. And then come next time you come back, you still don't have $5 to loan me? Because I'm hurting. I sure could use it. I don't have 20. Matter of fact, if you got a dollar, 30 cent, 50. Like he said, I would give him the hard luck story with no shame at all in the system of race. Even if I had, $10,000 cash in my wallet, it would still be because of the system of racism. I am in a hard luck position. Like, absolutely not. I wouldn't feel bad about it. And you're not going to bully me about that. They can really, come at you on that. Go down. Well, how about $10? You don't want to do the 20. Just do 10. Because we go, what are you talking about? Like, and even, would you all do that for another employee? Have you all done this for other employees? Are you going to do this for me when I leave? Can you stop putting my water on the floor? Like, come on. That's, have your response ready. When they do that on your job, when they come around, $25 to go in this person's birthday card, or they had a fire. We had that one too. Somebody had a fire at the house, $25, sympathy for the fire or their whatever it is. They got athlete's foot, $25. I'm good. In fact, I'm not good. I'm hurting. Do you have $5 you can loan me? Let's see. The internal and external, when you discovered it, I might be a little ignorant. And you said the fellow that came in who did the check on the computer, that it seemed you were the only employee there.
who was an internal employee but had an external listing just to help us and myself primarily, because I am a little confused, greatly retarded. What is the difference between being listed internally and externally, and why was that so readily noticeable that something was askew with that?
Okay, like we all in the department have access, like a login to this program where we look up official record documents. And when we have the internal employees, they have more access to things and they don't have all of these errors as an external listed entity, like maybe the tax collector or the county public works, or people that just have like these outside accounts, or people that's on the outside that come in to make purchases. Whereas if you're an internal employee, you'd be listed as internal and you have like the ability to access documents that you can't access on the outside being external.
Gotcha. And that's so important. We talk about that all the time in terms of how white people deny information. So you said the fellow that came in who was working on the computer, he doesn't work at the courthouse. Like this is some outside person who was coming to do his work.
Right. Okay. And he had pointed it out.
Oh.
And then the supervisor was trying to act like, oh, man, what's going on? But I guess, I had called her, practicing racism, I guess. And, I must have done something when I was setting up the account. But this was 4 years ago. I've been in the department for almost 4 years.
I can't believe it.
So, like, what happened to my the receipts I done in 2018? It's all breaking off. I see a couple in 2017, then it goes to 2019, and some in this month in 2020, and we can't even find out what happened to the ones in 2018. So, I'm like, can I still access to the ones that I did before I got this new account? So she's like, yeah, we're gonna make you a new account, get you all started up. So. She tries to hide practicing the racism, but she knows I catches it. She knows I caught it.
It does not get any better than tacky. And tacky can come in a variety of forms, but it does not get any better than tacky and concealing of accurate, constructive information that takes so many. That alone, we would be stunned. Just finding out how many different ways individuals who are classified as white conceal information from us. That 4 years, 4 years, I've been here listed as external employee. I'm not in the department. I'm missing all kinds of information, can't access files and things. And then that's another one that remind me when you went up to report the fellow who was about to shank you, the sergeant. It's not for me, is it? Put that nigga's water on the floor and didn't get him logged in. Man, we have been going to. Oh, yes. The secretary will see you now. Thank God. Yes. I'll go alert the squad and the rest of the folks. We can continue. We got to be more discreet because he's caught on to a few. I mean, what type of environment are we working? That's all of us. This is the courthouse. I just say that all the time for emphasis. This isn't McDonald's. I would expect this if he was talking about he worked at a strip club in Vegas or Magic City in Atlanta. Oh, okay. They might do any kind of unsavory thing. This is the courthouse. Like, why are we shanking employees at the courthouse? Context of white supremacy. Man, stay safe. Take any threats against you in the workplace serious. That is nothing to joke about. Any threats against you in the workplace, take it serious. Gavin DeBecker, we read that whole book that was huge. He had that whole section on workplace racism that is precisely the type of thing that he talked about. Report it immediately, and that might be a police report if you have something that's that flagrant. Man, I'm almost at a loss for words. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Feel free.
While we're waiting, I'll see if folks have anything else. I'll see if I can work through our emails. Let's see. Greetings, Gus. I was listening to the weekly workplace racism recording done by Mr. Fox. Much obliged, Mr. Fox. Tremendous work uploading the archives across the pond. Just dedicated investment in the cows for such a long time. It is mega appreciated, Mr. Fox. Message me on Facebook. I forgot I have to reply. Much obliged. I will respond post haste, Mr. Fox. Continuing. Listening to the recording done by Mr. Fox, and I heard one caller state that his personal phone was being moved when he leaves his work area. We talked about that last week. If this is really the case and he wants proof that this is happening, he can install his mobile device that will record when the screen locked. One app I suggest is called Background Video Recorder. This is a very easy one to use, but they also have several to choose from. If this victim suspects the white supremacist of doing what they do, this should get the evidence he needs with sound. You can also use front or rear camera to make your device a tempting target for whoever he suspects of messing with his mobile device. Added information, this app is for Android mobile devices, but I'm sure there are some for Apple devices, of course. Black self-respect. I love it. I love it. I love it. If you're going to have that technology. Now, I still think that the best policy by far, take your phone with you. Treat that like, you know, your wallet, because in many instances it is now 2020. Treat it like your wallet. Have it on your person at all times. I think people mentioned the portable portable charges and all that. So if you're, you know, just taking it out to charge, you can charge it and still have it on your person, that sort of thing. I think that's the absolute best policy. But camera might be good too. That way you can have evidence. If people are tampering with your phone, you can add that to your workplace file.
Gus, could you repeat the name of that device again?
It is let's see. Okay, Background Video Recorder. Background Video Recorder. That's the name.
Okay, thank you.
Any other folks have comments, questions, folks we missed at all?
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Bay Area mother.
Greetings, thank you. Hi. So at work, I got an email stating that it was my last day with, this was on Monday, yeah, this Monday, stating it was my last day with two of my clients from that I have 3 days a week, my first and my last. So it's like, oh, okay. And they said they would call me after the session that I was doing it, because I got it right before the session. And so the parents of the first child, they were saying, oh, yeah, I got this this message. Who's calling this early? And then she said, she listened to the message and it said maybe something similar to what I just said. And she said, baby, wake up. Listen to this. Then she played it for him. And then, what's going on? You need to write a letter or something? I was like, well, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I said, I guess they'll let me know after the session. So it just said, the email in the email, it also said they were doing schedule change, you know, switching the schedule around or something like that. So later on that morning, I got a call, but I missed it. So I called it back and, you know, hi, how are you? And this, that, and the other. And she's like, I was like, I was calling you back because I missed your call. I didn't, you know, I don't know. I missed your call. Oh, no, it's okay. I was wondering something. And then she said, well, we're taking the two people that I just stated off of my load because they need other kind of treatment, I guess, that I can't do, which I so can't, right? And I said, okay, well, that's fine. And he's like, well, you're not in trouble or anything. I just wanted you to know that we got other people for you. So they'll just be off your schedule and you'll just have because if you don't have clients, you don't get the money. So I missed that. So And she said, but by this week, which already passed, or next week, she would have whomever. And if I wanted them, I could take them. If not, they'll just find something else. So that kind of thing. So I said, okay, well, it's not a problem. Just whatever. I'm not tripping off of what, whatever, just because I don't really care. So that, and so she said, okay, and your vacation is approved. So I get, I'm taking the vacation for like 4 days because I needed it regardless of if they took them off my, you know, load or not. But they're very heavy, very heavy. The children are very high on the spectrum, and I don't know why they would put me on it in the first place, and I don't know why they would have them doing just foolishness over and over that doesn't pertain to anything that they need when they need real speech and just other things that they're not getting. So that's all I wanted to say. I don't know what else is going on. I'll find out the rest later. I saw one of my main supervisor, and she was just, you know, hi and all that stuff. And then she said, well, I heard you're getting this some little girl. And I said, oh, I didn't know. She's like, oh, well, maybe you, I don't know yet. It, you know, it might not be confirmed, but that's what I heard. So I said, okay, well, it doesn't matter just as long as my schedule's full, you know, full time. So that's it. And I'll mute my line. And thanks for taking my call. And you'll be okay about the people that whatever the job you just were just at, because it's already expected. And we already knew that they would be tuning in, because even between her saying something, because, you know, how they appear to be friendly, so we automatically gravitate to them. And them just listening anyway, because they're following you anyway, because they're just studying you, because you're so you. So that's all. And I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, Bay Area Mommy. Bravo on taking your vacation, either after they've messed over the schedule and all of that. Hey, 4 days vacation. I put in for the time. I need it. I'm going to take that time for self-care. Needed. I think all of us, like, do things, recognize when you need to, time to self-care, make time for self-care. It is so vital to, after we have been violated and abused in all kinds of ways, some that we're aware of, some that we're not, to be able to take time to replenish, restore, try to heal a little bit as best we can, and then continue the effort to replace white supremacy with justice and neutralizing workplace racism specifically in the midst of all of that. Let's see. One other person wrote in, and then we'll double check, see if anybody else has comments or suggestions they'd like to share before we conclude. Let me see. This person wrote in. I wrote in last week about a workplace observation about when I suspected racists asked, what is wrong with you when you don't smile? Well, I've been accused by a racist suspect of being angry, or you're too serious and you need to lighten up. Lighten up. I believe the word light and or lighten is in the code book. I think so, too. I've had these said to me quite often, or what's wrong with you? My observation is this: I don't stay on the same site, so I work with different suspected racists. And when I was way more confused, I would chuckle at their childish behavior. Now that I have matured in my understanding of what it means to be white, I no longer engage in or allow them to engage me in their racist behavior. Gus, you are absolutely correct. Whites study their Negroes, even by listening to this program. You also asked about how racism would come up in a workplace setting. Well, surprisingly, suspected racist brings up race just about all the time. My workplace report for this week goes as follows. 1. My workplace racism report is, while at work, a white man asked me if I had any money he could borrow, in which I told him I was broke. Outstanding. Can you loan me? I was going to ask you. I needed a few dollars to get a can of beans.
Mind you, he's been here 5 years and I've only been here 5 weeks. He also shared an anecdote about another non-white black male about how he, the black male, had a cookbook at his house, had a cookout at his house, and he was the only white person there, which gave me the perfect opportunity to ask, what does it mean to be white? So that's when he said, I'm not white. I'm half Irish and Italian. We just talked about that on the program, man. Transformers, they will get you. The suspected racist also said about the black male behind his back, he is a milkman. Not sure what that means. Me either. I haven't heard that one before. Not sure what that means, but here's what I found on the term. If anyone has any insight on this term, please share. Thanks. Construction victim. And so for milkman, what he found, a person that handles, pleases the wife, girlfriend when the husband or boyfriend is away. In the example sense, they have the baby doesn't look anything like you. Better ask the wife about the milkman. Some sort of sex. Now, see, I've said that before. This sort of tackiness doesn't get said that about this thing for the day, I guess. Doesn't get any better than tacky, where some sort of sexual debauchery, where they'll come in and talk about even in this sort of coded way, perhaps, with you, like all of that. I would not engage in any of that. In a work environment, and, you know, they might say, oh, that's just guys on a construction, but even, I don't care what the situation is, I'm not going to sit here and talk about a lot of filth with a white person or a non-white person in a work setting. We can be talking about the project and, you know, measurements, lots of things, all of the things that are happening in the world. We're not going to sit here and talk. You're not going to sit here and talk to me, a black person. Oh, yeah, this is where I go to with some trash. Talked about that yesterday. Environmental racism, they call it. Any other comments, suggestions from folks? If anybody's heard the term milkman, or suggestions on what we've heard?
Yes, can I be heard?
Draptomania.
Yes, I have heard of that saying. As a matter of fact, people in my neighborhood, my family has used it. They would say, like, your father's not your father. Your son, your mother must have been messing around with the milkman. Yes, sir, I have heard it.
It's somewhat outdated, being that it was made up during the days when it was common for a milk truck to come down your street. Of course, it was a male that delivered the milk, sat it on your porch, that sort of thing. And you know how white people are. They'll make something raunchy out of any particular condition. And that's primarily if the basis of this slang venture called milkman, the milkman. Something like, you know, it started dissipating in and around the, I would say, the 80s, 70s, 80s, as far as milk delivery is concerned, in thick glass bottles.
Hi, Doug.
Be in Toronto, yes, ma'am.
Yes, thank you. First, I wanted to say thank you to you and callers and listeners for your support. So I was looking up on the Urban Dictionary for milkman, and it says a black man who goes into the upper-class neighborhood who has sex with white women. There's another one that says for black men who prefer dating white women. And then there's another one where it says it's a code word for a person who sells alcohol to minors.
Interesting. All of those interesting. And again, all around some debauchery, because alcohol and lewd sex, that's all in the definition for debauchery, frequently all at the same time. But yeah, something lewd, something trashy, Just be mindful of that in the work context. We've heard a lot of that as well, that being about justice. Don't come and waste my time in a work context, especially with trash and filth and nonsense and gossip. Like, that's not what I am about. You want to project I'm about seriousness, black self-respect, learning things that are constructive. If you're going to give me constructive information about a project, about the company where we work, something, you know, that'll help me get a promotion, help me get a 25% raise, that's the sort of thing you want to come and talk to me about. And let that be my reputation so that people don't even begin with that sort of nonsense with me. Cut it at the knees. We will call it a broadcast. We did our 3 hours. We'll be here tomorrow, normal time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the compensatory call-in. We'll catch up on what has transpired over the past week. We should also be here on Monday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll have guests, retired corrections officer from the state of Georgia, with his observations on how white supremacy racism work. He wrote a book about his experience being employed in that field. That'll be this Monday. We had a number of folks who asked, Gus, are you doing the Super Bowl broadcast this Sunday? And I wasn't sure. I was going to do a little yoga and, you know, go hang out for the day, but I'm not sure. We do have a history of doing a number of Super Bowl broadcasts, so we will have to see. That might indeed be what we do for this here Sunday broadcast. Sometimes we broadcast to look at the commercials. Dr. Welsing has been with us a number of times. Dr. Layla Africa. We've had a number of different Super Bowl broadcasts over the years, so we shall have to see what we're doing this here Sunday. Anywho. Tomorrow, compensatory call in, and much obliged for everyone's participation this here Friday, hopefully worthy of your time and energy. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Let's stay sober, keep our brain computer working as well as possible. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver, just doing as much as we can to stay safe. In addition, sober, buckled up. If you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. Just trying to do all the little things we can to stay away from the Daniel Holtzclaw's Amber Geigers of the known universe. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.